1, 2, 2, 3, 4, 5. We're here.
Haley, do we have any requests to speak in public comment?
Yes, we do. We have one so far.
Okay.
Christine, Elizabeth.
Well, Christine must have a lot to say. She's two of the four attendees.
Well, one of those could be Leslie, possibly, because she sometimes uses one of their computers.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure. We don't know. Clearly, I don't think Christine's really cloned herself. Okay.
Well, welcome to Christine, as well as Elizabeth and Michael. It's good to have you on board. Hopefully, we won't disappoint. Okay, let's call this meeting to order. And Haley, if you would post the flag of the United States, thank you. There we are.
Nice.
And,
yeah.
Let's all recite the Pledge of Allegiance, if we don't mind.
Right.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag
of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, with liberty and justice for all. It's been a while since we did the Pledge of Allegiance, and I thought this would be a good time to remind ourselves that despite everything that's going on, we do live in a fairly special nation, and where we will strive perhaps with a greater sense of heart and caring to achieve liberty and justice for all in our nation. And last week, I read a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And since then, there was another unfortunate killing of a black man by law enforcement. And this time it was in Atlanta, Georgia, which happens to be the birthplace of Martin Luther King. So I thought I would just read that quote one more time, if you don't mind. So this is Martin. I refuse to accept the view that mankind is so tragically bound to the starless midnight of racism and war that the bright daybreak of peace and brotherhood can never become a reality. I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word. And I concur with that 100%. And let's all hope that we're moving toward that type of world and that type of existence with each passing day. All right, moving on. We have we've established a quorum, or we are establishing a quorum. Mr. Carmel, do we have anything to report from closed session?
No, we don't, President Farmer. Nothing to report.
Thank you very much. Anyone have any agenda review, additions or deletions, anything out there? There's one thing that we're going to do today in preparation for major changes in agenda structure next month. So today we're going to do a little thing. We're going to reverse items 4 and 5. So therefore, managers' reports will come before board member committee and liaison reports. And that's almost right around the corner. So next we have public safety, and Commander Nelson, are you, I do see you out there, so, and you are unmuted, so please go ahead and give your report, and welcome, and hope your day is going well.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Commander Nelson at the Sheriff's Coast Station. So I have the report for May. We had in Cambria 308 calls for service. Last year at the same time, we had 323. We had 24 calls for service regarding disturbances of note. We were dispatched to a male and female screaming at each other in the 2100 block of Blythe. Upon deputies arriving, they determined a domestic violence incident had occurred, and one of those subjects was eventually arrested for domestic violence. We had 5 calls for service regarding burglaries. Of note, we were called to the 2000 block of Main Street regarding a burglary of a storage shed at that location. In this case, 2 locks were cut from the shed to gain entry. The owner of the shed could tell items were moved. However, nothing was reported stolen at that time. That case is currently active and being investigated by deputies. We had 6 calls for service regarding thefts. We were dispatched to a theft in the 2000 block of Rodeo Grounds. In this specific case, a suspect had struck the victim with a cane and took the victim's dog. During the investigation, the suspect was identified and the dog was located. Charges are being filed with the district attorney's office in this case for assault with a deadly weapon and robbery. We had 2 calls for service regarding vandalism. We had a report of a damaged mailbox in the 2000 block of Leona in Cambria. There are no suspect leads at this time. We had 4 calls for service regarding phone scams. Of note, a resident of Cambria received an email stating that they knew the person's passwords and would use the passwords unless they paid them using Bitcoin. That did not happen, and there was no financial loss. And that is all I have for my report.
Thank you, Commander Nelson. Before I ask the board if they have any questions or comments, and I do recall within the past year and a half or so that I was getting something in the mail, in my email, I should say, maybe once or twice a week, claiming that, well, they were observing me, you know, watching pornography and this type of thing. And if I didn't pay them in Bitcoin, that they would reveal this to the rest of the world. And this went on for about 6 months. And I would just, you know, hit junk mail and they'd come right back. And ultimately they gave up. And I guess they must be doing this to a lot of folks. Let me ask you, when you say 308 calls for service, that's like 10 a day.
But also remember those calls for service. So that number is any call that comes into our sheriff's dispatch. So it's not necessarily something that's criminal related. Right. So if somebody calls in, say, and says there's a disabled vehicle on the road, we forward it to Highway Patrol, who will handle it, but it still counts for a call for service.
Right.
So those numbers seem high, but it doesn't mean that they're all, you know, related to crime.
Right. Well, thank you. So as I say, any members of the board or staff wish to ask a question of Commander Nelson? Doesn't appear anyone does. So Commander, I hope it's yes.
I had my hand up.
Okay. I'm looking over here where people, it says raise hand.
But, okay. Do you want me to go there now? Okay.
Well, you don't have to do it right now, but maybe next time. So yes, Vice President Seidel, go right ahead.
So I was just curious, the shed on Main Street that the locks were cut off of, is this the same shed that's been gone through and stolen from at least on one, if not 2 occasions before?
I'm not sure about that. I haven't specifically heard of that, but that could be the case. But to answer your question, I don't know specifically.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Commander Nelson. And like I say, have a pleasant and uneventful weekend, you and your staff.
Thank you very much. You too. Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye. All right, let's move forward and have a report from our Fire Chief, William Hollingsworth. William, how are you today, buddy?
Good, President Farmer. Thank you for letting me be here. William Hollingsworth, Cambria Fire. I have 3 general area updates for you. Let's start with the COVID pandemic stuff for the county. Per our last operational briefing, there's 376 cases that were tested positive in the county. Of those, over 300 now are fully recovered and back without any issues. So we're still noticing a very good response that way. Almost 4,100 people have been tested in the county at this point. Our emergency operations center is still running and still in effect to help facilitate everything from continuing testing to patient care to eventual reopening of the economy. They have relocated that to the government center downtown. That happened a little bit earlier this month. And they have gone to what they're referring to as a virtual EOC on the weekends. And that allows the people that are participating to work from home and actually safe distance and keep a little bit, help follow those guidelines, even for the people that are helping resolve this. There is going to be a follow-up testing. We just got notified in Cambria that's going to be held on June 24th and 25th at the Vets Hall again. And this will be by appointment only. It was very successful last time with one of the areas hosting more tests than any other place in the county. You can go ahead. Because it's appointment only, you can register for that at emergencyslow.org/testing, or you could call 805-543-2444, and we could put that information on the website to make sure it's available for the community. From a prevention standpoint, I told you that we're one of the things that we are still doing in the fire department is still continuing all of the inspections and plan review to make sure that we don't hamper any of that in the community as we move forward. We did start initially to see a downturn in that, but that started to pick up again. We're still seeing quite a bit of remodel occurring. We still do have all of, from the fire department standpoint, all the public events and public education stuff is shut down, and we're not going to reopen that until we've been advised from the EOC and the state that that would be safe to do so. We are continuing with the fire hazard fuel reduction program. So you're seeing a lot of that occurring in the community right now with people cutting their parcels. And as a reminder, the deadline for that is going to be July 15th. If you have any questions about that, feel free to call me at the office and I'd be happy to address that. And then lastly, on the prevention side, we have on behalf, the Fire Safe Council on our behalf has submitted a grant to address some defensible space issues on the hillside above the Tent City area where the hardware store is. This is an area that we targeted for a grant application that we got approved on from the state that was approved but not funded. So we're trying to get another, we're looking at other areas for funding, and we're trying to exhaust all avenues to make that happen just to try to increase our fire safety for the community. And then lastly, on the operational side, we had a total of 64 emergency responses for the month, which is starting as an uptick again. We did notice a big downturn during the last few months. We're still about 20 behind where we were last year. And then cumulatively at this point last year, we were at 466 emergency responses, and now, and right now we're at 363. So you can see that there has been a little bit of a fall off. Fire season has most definitely started if you haven't been paying attention to all the stuff that's going around, and we are active participants in that. We have, as you know, we staff a water tender that's available here in the community, and by automatic and mutual aid, I've had it deployed on three separate fires for about 4.5 days now, from Pozo to Cayucas to Avila. So it's being utilized aggressively, and again, this is all part of the California Master Mutual Aid Plan, and I use this opportunity to just remind you that we participate in that in the hope that we never have to use it on our end. Although when we've had fires in the past, that's how we get all of those resources here. So a thank you for to all of you for continuing to support that process. Our personnel get out, help in putting those fires out, and gain valuable experience in the process, and then help those communities. So with that, I'm done with my report, and I'm over to you for any questions.
Thank you, Chief. Anyone on the board wish to ask the Chief any questions? I don't see anyone. So Chief, thank you so much, and happy weed abating out there in the world, and have a pleasant weekend. Okay, and an uneventful weekend also.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for the opportunity to report.
You bet. Thank you. Thank you for being available.
President Farmer, excuse me. I did have a question. I'm sorry. I had my hand up. But, you may not have seen it. Is the Chief still here? Yes. The question has to do, I note one structure fire, and I was just kind of curious as to what that structure was, because I don't recall hearing or reading about it.
Well, to be honest with you, Director Howe, I don't know off the top of my head. That could be anything from a small fire in a garage to something a little bit larger. I know that this last month we did have a fire in a garage, and it was caused by some people doing a lot of work with linseed oil. And when you do that and then you put all those rags together, it creates a spontaneous combustion problem and will light off and has burned entire homes down before. So luckily that was able to be caught very quickly. I can't confirm whether or not this is the incident you're referring to, but I'd be happy to check and let you know.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you. I just was kind of curious, but it's good to hear about the linseed oil.
Yes, sir.
We have one other question for you, Chief, and that's from Director Pearson. David, go right ahead.
Thank you, President Farmer. Chief, the Legion is not holding their annual fireworks or picnic this year. So is there any special coordination that's being done to keep a sharp eye for people using illegal fireworks in our town?
There is, Director Pearson. We're actually staffing up a little bit for that around the 4th. We've already had discussions with both CAL FIRE, their law enforcement side, and then also state parks, because we know that even though the fireworks display is not moving forward this year, that doesn't mean that people won't be coming to our community possibly expecting that or wanting to have a party or even to bring those items themselves. So we are pre-planning for that a little bit within the next, if it hasn't happened already, within the next couple of days, the fireworks signs will be going up on each side of town. Because as a reminder, they're per the fire code adopted in this community, they're all forms of fireworks in Cambria are illegal and punishable by fine. And even though those are posted and heavily marketed that way, we do have people that violate that every year. And again, the goal for the enforcement is always compliance. We're not looking for any kind of punitive action. We have had to go there on a very rare occasion, but almost always it is a simple discussion reminding people that this isn't allowed here and they're very happy to comply.
Okay, one more question. Is barbecue season and also, sit outside around a fire type season, are there any municipal codes or anything that prohibit fires like on the beach or in a fire pit at your house or anything like that?
Yes, per our locally adopted fire code, open burning within Cambria is not allowed. You can have a fire for the purpose of a barbecue and feeding. That is acceptable, but a open pit fire, like they would sit around in lawn chairs and stuff like that, is not allowed. The commercially available units that are either gas-powered, pellet-fed, or have spark arresters on them are allowed. These are the types of units you would buy from Home Depot or Lowe's or Costco. Those are okay because they're not putting up the embers and the sparks that actually typically cause the problems. We do get occasionally calls on this, and we're happy to go out and investigate. And the vast majority of the time we go and look, they are people using devices that are in compliance. So that's not the issue. We do occasionally get notice that there's people that that are trying to do open burning because a fire pit is at the location. This frequently is being done at destinations like Airbnbs or VRBOs where people might be coming from an area that aren't familiar with that. We've started to have some discussions about getting some additional information available for the people that are renting these places to include that as a guideline from the owners to make sure that they're in compliance. And whenever we have to go out and deal with that, again, that's usually a simple discussion and reminding them that it's not allowed here and they put it out. On the beach, technically that's state property. That is not allowed on state property either. And we will coordinate a response with the state parks and go deal with that as well.
Great. Thank you for the information. Appreciate that.
Thank you, David. I see no other questions from the board or staff. So thank you, Chief, and be well.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's move on to, we're moving on to public comment. And let me just take note of the item that's way at the top of the agenda, and that is since we, you know, since we're having a Zoom meeting and people are not attending in person, if any members of the public out there, you know, wish to submit written comments to the deputy district clerk, Haley will be more than happy to receive your comment, and the address is boardcomment@cambriacsd.org. So that's boardcomment@cambriacsd.org. And of course, that doesn't just apply to this particular public comment area, but if you have a comment further on to any of the agenda items, you can do that then. So Haley, do we happen to have any public comment on items not on the agenda?
I do. I have two requests to speak, and the first person is Christine Heinrichs.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Christine. Go right ahead.
Thank you. The board's minutes include the names of those members of the public who address them at public meetings, but the minutes do not mention what anyone said. There is no comment as to what the speakers were asking of the board or what they were favoring or opposing. This leaves the minutes oddly silent on what the public's responses are to the issues before the board. I make it a point to include my comments in writing. Future minutes should reflect what those of the public who address the board are saying. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. And next to speak is Haley.
Tina Dickinson.
All right. Tina, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, President Farmer. This is just a very brief announcement that just occurred within the last couple of hours, I believe, on the news. Today, Governor Newsom issued a statewide order for Californians to wear face coverings in common and public indoor spaces and outdoors when physical distancing is not possible. So that's as of today, and it's mandatory. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm hoping to comment on that a little later, so thank you for starting the ball rolling on that very important item. So seeing no further public comment on non-agenda items, let's move on to agenda item 5A in the general manager's report. And Mr. Weigold, welcome aboard. Hope you're having a good day.
Good afternoon, President Farmer. A quick question on this schedule. Did you not want to go to the consent and regular business and move the manager's reports to the end? Or I got confused as to, or?
We'll do that in July.
Okay.
Because I know we've already reinvented that particular agenda. I don't want to start moving stuff around and confusing people. So we're just flip-flopping the manager's reports and reports from the board and committees and that type of thing.
Okay. Okay, very well. My report's fairly short today. All of our core missions proceed as normal. And all CCSD employees are healthy and safe. We continue to implement all our COVID precautions and operations, such as masks, social distancing, et cetera. As far as major events this past month, we'll hear a little bit more from the utility manager, but I noticed just one typo in that the district met with PG&E in our first workshop on June 2nd for the investment grade audit. And that was a very good meeting that set us up for a lot more planning and organizing required for the next step in that process. We've continued a lot of work on the coastal development plan, working with the California Coastal Commission, the CCSD Board Ad Hoc Committee, the SLO County Planning Department, as well as with staff, and making good progress there. And we'll be releasing the project description here with the board package by the end of the day tomorrow. Last but not least, a lot of work went into the budget for 2021. We'll be talking about that as a board agenda item in a little bit. And with that, unless you have any questions, I'll pass the baton over to Carlos to talk about some significant events in the facilities and resources area.
All right. Anyone on the board have any questions of our general manager? Seeing no hands raised, Carlos, go right ahead. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, board. Appreciate the opportunity. You have my report, which I believe starts on page 8, and I provided quite a bit of pictures there of all the activities that our department's been doing for the last month, a little more than a month. We've been extremely busy out there maintaining the trails on the Piscolini Ranch, widening those up to provide social distance. We've mowed them now about 3 times in the past 3 months to allow people to feel safe and to enjoy the ranch out there. We have also been doing quite a bit of tree work related to dead and dangerous trees behind homes and along trails. And we were fortunate enough that the Slow Fire Safe Council agreed to reimburse us for $20,000 of the work that you see on the ranch. We have completed that work, and we'll be submitting that paperwork to the Slow Fire Safe Council to get that reimbursement from them. You also notice that we tried to leave some of those trees as habitat on the ranch. We left a few snags out there to provide some habitat for birds so they can perch and have a place out there. Quite a bit of work's been going on fire breaks and weed abatement on the Piscolini Ranch. We've concluded our annual weed abatement along the entire perimeter of the ranch, and we'll be doing a second pass here in about a month on the Huntington and Windsor fire breaks. We've also been doing a lot of work on invasive plant removal, coordinating with the Friends of the Piscolini Ranch, trying to get a handle on Italian bull, mustard, and all those nasty invasive plants that just don't seem to go away. And then I also posted a picture there of a really nice, positive collaboration with the high school principal to put banners up on the streetlights to honor the graduating class, co-senior class. So I worked with the principal over a little over a month, gave him the information on size, where to get them, what to order. And he was able to provide those to us. We went ahead and installed them, and our plan is to keep them there for the rest of this month, and then we'll take them down and give them back to the high school principal, who, according to his plan, is at the 10-year graduation reunion, he'll pull those up for the class so they can remember such an interesting time that they went through. And then the last picture that I have there is just an ongoing restoration project that we're doing on the Piscolini Ranch. This is just an example. I believe it's on page 16 of the report. It's just an example of many areas that we're restoring out there on the ranch. And you can see on the left-hand side of that report, a picture, 2015 December, right along the Bluff Trail. It's bare. There's hardly any plants out there. It's trampled. We installed some signage out there, put some cable across to stop people from walking out there. And then you can see this year in May, just the change of wildflowers and growth that you're seeing on that area. And like I said, this is just one of the areas. We've got several areas. If you walk on the Piscolini Ranch, you'll see these signs, area closed, restoration in progress. And this is the reason why we're doing it, to restore these sensitive areas. That's my report, unless you have any questions for me.
Director Rice, you have a question for Carlos or a comment?
Yes. First of all, thank you so much for making sure that those banners happened. I don't know if we have plans or if the high school has plans that they'd like to continue this as a
former high school teacher, I 100% behind trying to continue this tradition. I think it's a good thing for the community to see their young people who are graduating. So thank you for helping coordinate that. I would like to see that same area on the ranch that you were showing for the restoration in the same season once we get there, so that we can, you know, a winter picture is different than what happens when it starts to bloom out there. And then I just have a question about something that I noticed on the expenditure report, but since we're talking about the ranch and the trails, there's an expenditure for trail cameras on the ranch. And just as a general rule, I'm a little uncomfortable with that. It speaks to less about, it's for me, it's less about the surveillance privacy issue, more about the trust issue. If we're putting them out there because we're worried people are doing something that they shouldn't be, I'd rather trust that most people are going to do the right thing rather than monitor everything around town to catch people who are doing things outside the lines or whatever. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Sure. So as far as a picture, absolutely. We'll take pictures this winter and make sure that we can compare apples to apples and see what the restoration is there. As far as the flags, the principal did tell me that he received so many positive comments from the community that he was thinking about doing it every year now. So I'm sure he'll approach the CSD at some point and try to get something formally for that. As far as the cameras, so we are utilizing cameras out there for research. We've got several cameras out throughout the forest taking pictures of the growth on the areas that we worked on last year. We're getting data about the temperature as well of the plants out there. So a lot of the cameras that you see out there are more for research and investigation. It's not for putting them out to see what the public is doing now. Every so often we have some vandalism of the sorts on the ranch, but that's very uncommon.
All right, thank you, Carlos. Anyone else have any questions or comments for Carlos? Anyone on the board? Well, Carlos, I just want to make mention of two things. The first time I saw the first banner that I saw of the young student up there on the pole, it just put a big smile on my face. And like you said, you've gotten so much positive feedback from the community, especially us older folks. I think maybe we resonate with it more to see a young person and just get imagining, well, the remainder of their journey is ahead of them. And just seeing their picture and being celebrated for their life at this age is really cool. And I also want to make mention of the fact of the photo, the last photo that you have there. Having lived here for, you know, 33 years and walking the ranch, there's some years where the lupin and the poppies are abundant, some years where you hardly see any lupin at all. It was really nice to see this photo. So thank you so much. All right. Moving on, it appears that Ms. Duffield, yes.
I do have two members of the public who wish to speak on this item.
On which item is that, Haley?
The general manager report.
Okay, thank you. Go right ahead. The first person is?
The first person is Elizabeth Benhausen.
All right. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon. I just unmuted. I have a quick question, please. And the question is about the statement about the coastal development permit for the SWF. The last sentence says, the board will receive and discuss the latest project description draft at a special board meeting on Thursday, June 25th. My question is, does this mean that you've decided against a town hall on this issue, which you had, I thought, decided some months back or weeks back? And the second part of my question is, does this mean that public participation in this meeting, this special meeting on the 25th, will be limited to 3 minutes per person, as is your usual pattern. Those are two very different ways of approaching this draft, and I assume that the description by the general manager is accurate. There will not be a decision made on this draft, but only a review and discussion of it on the 25th. So, in other words, I'd like a little explanation, if I may ask for it, please, because it's unclear to me exactly what you're intending to accomplish on the 25th, and I will certainly stay up later than my novel reading 7:30 tomorrow evening so that I can start reading the draft promptly on the Friday before the meeting. Thank you.
General Manager Weigold, I think she was requesting a response of some type.
Oh, I sort of took that as a board question, but I'm happy to handle it. I can't answer. Go ahead, Director Rice.
We're going to cover that in the CDP committee report. We'll cover some. We'll make sure we answer those questions as part of that report.
Very well.
I mean, you're welcome to give your input. I'm just saying that's going to be part of the CDP ad hoc committee report.
That's fine.
All right. Thank you, General Manager Weigold and Director Rice. I hope that was a satisfactory answer for Ms. Bettenhausen. Did you say
I wrote down her question, so I make sure we address them.
Thank you. Haley, did you say there were two request for public comment on this item?
Yes, I have another request to speak from Tina Dickinson.
Thank you, Henry.
Go right ahead.
Now, thank you, President Farmer. I observed something today that we've not seen before, and that is that the general manager looks as if he's in the same room with Pamela Duffield, and with a very little bit of distance between them. Are they at the office, or what exactly is going on there? I'd like to know, and I think we should have been told that. And also, as a follow-up, so that Director Rice and Director Pearson can answer this for me too, that on the project description, I would like to know if it has been revised since the April 8th version that was sent to the Coastal Commission that Mr. Lester commented on. Has it been revised since then? I'm assuming it would have been, but I don't know that. Thank you.
Thank you. Would either of you wish to comment or answer your Tina's question?
I'll make sure that's included. It has had revisions since the 8th.
All right, fine. Well, thank you. Thank you for answering Tina's question. And Tina, I'll just say yes. General Manager Weigold and Ms. Duffield are at the office in preparation for dealing with the agenda item on the budget. So that's what's happening there. Okay. Thank you. Moving forward to, I believe the next item would be the finance manager report, Ms. Duffield. If you have a report, please feel free to move forward.
Thank you, President Farmer, members of the board. So I do have a correction to make related to the expenditure report, and it is on page 28 of the board packet. There were two vendors that were combined with one subtotal, and that is Liberty Composting and Liebert Cassidy and Whitmore. So the correct subtotal for Liberty Composting should be $8,591.10. And for Liebert Cassidy and Whitmore, it should be $5,860. So I just wanted to point that out and give those corrected totals. As far as the rest of the report, we're still continuing to have every other week meetings with the Tyler folks. Just yesterday, Director Howell and I had and the conference session with them yesterday to kind of just talk about next steps and how we're going to do all the work that we need to do with Tyler, since they're not allowed to travel for the rest of the calendar year. So we've kind of been working through those details and doing other things that we can do remotely and via sending information back and forth. So we'll continue to provide details on those things as we have more information. And then we're still trying to work out a schedule for the audit, and we're hoping to begin that in the next couple of weeks or the very early part of July for the fiscal year 18-19 financial audit. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any board members have any questions of Ms. Duffield? Seeing no hands raised and no microphones unmuted, it appears none, no questions to be asked or comments. So thank you, Ms. Duffield, and obviously we'll be talking with you later. Thank you so much. Next is the utilities report, and Mr. D'Enzo, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Director Farmer. So the utilities report for activities in May, I acknowledge that it seemed like it happened a year ago, but yeah, it was a lot of things that happened last month. A couple of highlights I wanted to report on, and I think I even alluded to it in the past. Here in our treatment plant, we're still moving forward with all the design and preparation for the upgrades for the PG relating to the PG&E project. One of the things that we did was we did an inspection of the existing tanks, which I alluded to last month, but to formalize the discussion on it, we had to clean up the tanks because the engineering inspectors needed to get in there and inspect it. And the good news, as I alluded to last month, is that we're able to repurpose those tanks. And it's going to save the district several million dollars, which is good news for us, which as we'll continue to hear reports about that as more project elements are more defined. Other things too around the plant here are there's been a lot of deferred maintenance that we've done, there were some bathroom maintenance that we needed to do, and also some building maintenance. A lot of these are in our shop buildings that have been deferred for several years, at least since the 90s. So I'm glad that we were able to do some of those projects. Moving on to the collection system, we have started to do some more collection system maintenance. We've hired our collection system maintenance staff, and they've been doing a great job doing some jetting and vacuuming of our collection system lines. They did a lot of that effort here in Main Street. In a nutshell, there's been a lot of debris that has accumulated over the years, some of which have not been jetted for several years. So we're finding some interesting things, and I do hope to post some of those pictures in the future, because we've also received our video camera, which will start videoing some of these efforts. So the staff is continuing to do some work on that. There's many miles of lines yet to go, but I'm hoping that we can get a good cycle of maintenance on these lines within the year or the year or two. Also, in the water department, the chief said, there's fire season. Now there's also leak season. Historically, the explanation for that is a lot of the soil has started to dry up. And as you know, whenever soil is wet or saturated, it expands a little bit. And when it dries up, it starts to contract. Those little minor adjustments, though minor, it could could cause like leaks in pipes where pipes that are starting to be weak at certain joints or even certain pipe walls, that would trigger a leak event. And also, not only that, that certain voids within dry parts of the soil will start making their way up. So even though there might have been leaks that had been there prior, it doesn't show up till the soil is dry. And also another explanation is that there's more flows too. Typically May and June, we'll start to see an increase in flows. Flows mean more velocity, and more velocity in pipes can also trigger these weak points. So a couple of things we're still continuing to highlight safe practices. As you see in the report, there's a picture there of a blazing fire, and that was because one of the gas utilities punctured punctured a gas line there, and we were able to roast a lot of marshmallows that day. Just kidding. But yeah, I just wanted to point that out as the reason why it's very important to follow practices, and we've been doing that gratefully. And also, we've been doing also some hydrant maintenance. We've been doing on average 40 hydrants a week, and hopefully that work will continue and will continue to grow. Since there are 368 hydrants in our system, and we really need to do that on a yearly basis. So that's what we're continuing to work on that. As you can see also the some activities that that we've had as far as manual meter reads that are there on the third page 23. Just a little table there. And as far as the well data and production summary, we're continuing to track average on the well levels. And 84% of our total production diversion is coming from the San Simeon Creek aquifer. We're continuing, we finished the efforts, or well, we have not finished it, but we've entered 2020, 2019, 2018, and 2017 in our water conservation retrofits points bank. But we're still continuing to look for ways to upgrade the database because we still need to track other things like tracking inspections and tracking those that have actually done retrofits in the past, and being able to compute credits and all of that. So that effort is still continuing, and we hope to continue to provide updates on that. As you can see, there's a report retrofit verifications list there. The regulatory permits have all been submitted. It's all listed there, and there have been no notices of violations as well. And that concludes my report. So I'm also open for any questions.
Well, I see Director Rice has had her hand up for about 5 minutes. So Amanda, go right ahead.
First off, I would like to compliment you because I'm assuming that the workloads for John Alchin and Jim Green and the other folks in the two utilities departments hasn't really reduced much, but you're getting so much done. I really appreciate the coordination efforts that you've undertaken since you've undertaken the position. The other thing I just want to kind of scratch an itch and poke somewhere where I know we need to be getting back on the ball, which is with our FOG program, the Fat Soils and Greases program. I'm sure because we now have folks on the collection system that they're, we are in a better position to try and get our program that was created, I think, sometime in my first term of office. I want to say somewhere around 2013, 2014. About the Fat Soils and Greases and what the commercial businesses need to be doing so that we have less jetting that we need to do. Maybe that's something that you'll be addressing next month once we have more information from the work already being done. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Rice. I don't see any other. I have two requests right here from the members of the board. So, Director Howell, go first there.
Thank you. Just very briefly, just two things. I was noting there's always a problem when you investigate something and you discover some stuff maybe you'd rather not have known about. So you allude to some interesting discoveries in the collection system. I'm waiting to hear later on the edge of my seat as to how interesting that might have been. So I just wanted to comment on that, because when I hear interesting in that comment, in that context, it scares me a little bit, similar to the interesting times we're all living through. So that was one question. Oh, the other one, if you could just briefly, why is it that we get more flow in the summer? Is it that we have more usage because of the tourist season? Or I'm just asking for a little bit of clarity there.
Yeah, so obviously this year has been really weird, in a technical term. There was a reduced flow in, we started seeing it in March, but we really saw it in April, reduced flow. And so we were minus 6.6 acre feet per year difference in April. And then contrast that with a plus 0.21 difference in May. And traditionally, if you look over the years, even in the last, from here before, till the drought, there's always been an increase from April to May. And I think the answer is I wouldn't say obvious, but just in our area, like there's a lot of tourists and a lot of hospitality, and I'm going to guess everyone starts traveling during those times. And typically, summer is also more water use, because there's also more irrigation that takes place or starting to take place too. So, those are the two basic explanations for around here.
Yeah. All right, thank you. Before I go to Director Pearson, I know he has his hand up. I just want to comment on something that Director Howell said. You said, regarding the collection system, I'm on the edge of my seat. Now, maybe I'm the only one that found that rather humorous, considering what the collection system is. But anyway, David, go right ahead.
President Farmer, thank you for adding a little bit of comedy along the way. I know that's very good.
Thanks for noticing.
Reminding us to pay attention to what's going on. I was just wanting to know, Mr. Denizio, if you've got an update on where we are with the meter replacement program.
Oh, yes. So meter replacement program, we are going to start pursuing an RFP for that beginning in the fiscal year here, because I think we've completed our investigation as to, even working with Jim as he's been working on it before he even got here. There's a lot. It's not apples and oranges per se. There's also different technologies to consider, and even technologies that we can upgrade up to for the future if we wanted to. So all of that to consider. So we've spoken with several vendors, and I think we're going to develop an RFP for that. But we're going to wait until the fiscal year to put that out.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, David. So just a couple of comments real quick, Ray. First off, just to clarify, you were talking about hydrant maintenance, and you said in speaking, and I know you misspoke unintentionally, you said you're doing an average of 40 per week, and obviously it's 40 per month. So yes. For anyone that was listening and caught that, I thought I would clarify that. Also, you made a comment with regard to the tanks. And I think when most people think about infrastructure, they think of water tanks. You were talking about the tanks at the wastewater plant. But you made the comment that repurposing the tanks will save the district millions of dollars. If you could briefly explain how that could happen. I think those were your words. I wrote them down. How can we, in what fashion can we look forward to those financial savings?
Okay, so to speak just briefly on it, so in our energy measures or the projects, the ECMs for the PG&E, there's a couple of projects, one of which is an flow equalization basin, and another is a sludge basin. So currently there's two tanks that are there that we're using for sludge processing. We're using it for sludge digestion. But it's not being fully utilized. Those tanks that are there were actually part of a package plant that was there, but it's really not being used that way anymore. So there's a couple of cost savings there. If we were to not use those tanks, we would have to dismantle it and get rid of it. You know, that would cost, you know, tons of money. And also having to build new tanks, that would cost another bunch of money. So John Alchin and I have talked about this, and you know, he thinks that it's where we're saving about $4 million for that particular part of the project. So we're, you know, no doubt very happy about that, because of that, I think we're going to be able to do that, because flow equalization is very crucial for a plant like ours, especially when there's a lot of inflow issues, meaning that when the rains come, a lot of the rainwater gets into our sewer system and increases our hydraulic load. But we need to be able to handle those kind of surges, and the equalization basin is able to do that. So that's one. And also having, you know, our sludge digestion is also to improve that process. But you know, that we already do that, but to improve that process is also gonna be very helpful. So,
all right, okay. Well, thank you so much. Okay, moving on, and I hope nobody minds. And I know that General Manager Weigold referred to this a little bit earlier. And since we have probably a fairly busy closed session, if nobody minds, let's go down and quickly do the consent agenda and then go to hearings and appeals and then regular business. And then we can come back to board member committee and liaison reports. And I hope that's okay with everyone. So,
President Farmer, I was going to answer those questions from Dr. Bettenhausen had asked as part of the committee, our committee report.
Okay.
I'm okay with moving it. I just wanted to point that out because I delayed that response. I didn't think we were going to be delaying it past then. I don't object. I just wanted to raise the issue.
Okay. It just seemed like maybe doing those items first, because we're kind of cramped today with closed session. But we'll make sure that when we get to committee and liaison reports that you'll go first.
President Farmer, I also have three members of the public that wishes to speak on 5C.
Okay. All right. Well, go right ahead, Haley. Thank you. And the first contributor is?
The first member of the public is Christine Heinrichs.
All right. Thank you. Christine, go right ahead.
Thank you. I look forward to reading the EWS project description, which will be considered at that public meeting next Thursday. And Director Rice, I look forward to your report. I didn't realize that was coming up. Some of the questions I have about that is that I hope will be answered in the meeting will be, why is the district planning to run it for 2 months of testing? And why the 8 hours a day, 5 days a week schedule? What information is that expected to produce? How does running the plant relate to the required in-stream flow studies? In-stream flow studies need to be done when the plant is not running to establish the baseline stream flow. Does the district have the appropriate permits required to run it and discharge the water into the existing percolation ponds? There were some other issues that didn't come up, so I will hold the rest of my comments for later, but thank you very much.
Thank you, Christine. You know, since we're a little pressed for time, Ray, hopefully you've written those questions down, and perhaps, I don't know if we'll have time later in this meeting to address them, but maybe you could answer those questions, and perhaps Ms. Heinrichs could email those questions to you, and you could answer them at next week's meeting.
Yeah, I think Director Rice will comment on it, but I really hope to talk about it in more detail on the 25th. I have a lot of answers for all these questions, and I would prefer to defer to that time.
So. Right. Thank you. That's one of the reasons I suggested that. Yes. So Haley, we have two other people wishing to speak on this item.
Yes. The next person is Elizabeth Benhausen.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Bettenhausen, go ahead, please.
Thank you, President Farmer. I thank Manager Denzel for his report. I would suggest in the oral report, since you mentioned that there are things being found in the cleaning out of the sewer lines, it might be useful, since that's all public property, to contact the Cambria Historical Society and see if they'd also be interested in documenting the history of Cambria. And when you have a video also, but I assume you also have the products in hand that you'll be finding. So I'm very interested in history of local places like Cambria. So if you need any volunteers, let me know. The second thing, as you know, I emailed you this morning about the leaks explanation. I still find it implausible because of the data I've been collecting. But you must have a source before the daily monitoring was posted on the CCSD website. You must have a source of monthly usage, not only bi-monthly, which is the only thing I had access to. So I really hope we've never heard the explanation that the tourism season starts early in May already. So there's something odd going on here in terms of the interpretation for those of us who are simply interested public. And finally, my comment is on page 23 following. There's an extensive discussion of the conservation program, so-called. And I notice, I think I'm reading correctly in the budget now, that the reference is to a proposed $10,000 in this pending budget for fiscal year 2021 about a conservation database. And what I would like to ask, sir, is that in the near future, and now I can't get back to the picture to see if I'm even registering, in the near future, I would like the CCSD to give an explanation of the meaning of the word conservation. It has been used again and again in the most implausible ways, and I find that the alleged 2-in-1 is not a conservation measure necessarily. So please do not spend $10,000 on a new conservation database without, not today, sir, I'm not asking for that now, without in the very near future, however, explaining to us what in the world the CCSD means by conservation these days. I think it's inadequate in several ways, but I will not bore you in your very speedy meeting today for reasons that are clear with all the pages we've had to read quickly. So, President Farmer, thank you so much for allowing me to speak on this issue.
Thank you so much, Ms. Bettenhausen. And somehow I'm trying to envision your hat at the podium at the Vets Hall. And thank you. I just kind of got that for a moment. Do we have any? I don't think we have any more public comment on this item, do we, Haley?
We do. We have one more member of the public that wishes to speak, and that's Tina Dickerson.
Oh, my apologies. Go right ahead, Tina.
Thank you, Haley. Thank you, President Farmer. Regarding the utility manager's report, first of all, you're going to all be surprised that I actually have some praise for work that's being done. I was happy to see in my neighborhood on Park Hill, the Vector truck out and sewer lines being cleaned. That was most encouraging. I'm also pleased to hear that the hydrants are being cleaned out or tested, rather at 40 a month. That's good news. I wondered about the high pressure equipment though that's being used to clean out the sewer lines when our lines themselves are so old. So if we have new high pressure equipment that is cleaning out, Is there a chance then that we are having some breakages in the lines since they are so old? That was just something that popped into my mind. Another question for Mr. D'Enzo. If and when the plant is run, I would like to know what are the plans of disposing brine waste, if that will be the case. How do you intend to do that? I also would like to know about the five-year TMDL study. I understand there are some issues. You didn't mention that at all in your report today. I would like to know about that, if you have any information. I'm really curious in production, and I look at the production for each month. So I look at April, May, you know, when we've had this pandemic really affecting motels, restaurants, businesses, period. How is it that the numbers in the production are not really any different from a year ago? They're almost identical. How is that possible when you've had all the restaurants shut down, the motels, hotels, and the businesses pretty much totally shut down? How can the production then be up where it was last year? So those are my thoughts and questions. Thank you very much.
Ray, I know we're pressed for time, but maybe you could answer a couple of Ms. Dickinson's queries regarding breakage due to high pressure in the lines, and also with regard to, briefly with regard to water production, which I believe Ms. Dickinson and Ms. Bettenhausen both addressed.
Okay, so I'll hit on these really quickly. So as far as the high pressure jetting of lines, most of our sewer lines are clay pipes. They're pretty sturdy. But yes, we are vigilant on being sure that they're not going to cause any damage, mostly like right around the joints. But if you see what these lines that need to be jetted look like, it's like a clogged artery, just to put it kindly. So anyway, there's a lot of protection on that. But we are vigilant on that to be sure that we're not breaking any lines. Second of all, I want to defer the CDP SWF questions to the 25th. I have a good answer for that. And as far as the TMDL study, it's still in draft form. It was a big deal back in 2017 because there were some issues with nitrates. But I am proud to say that John Alchin, since then, has made really good modifications to the plant that has improved effluent quality. And I shared this with Coastal Commission this week, and they were very happy with that because, and actually, if you look on the Regional Board public website, it shows how the TMDL reduced drastically since 2017 when those changes needed were starting to be made. Okay, and I'm very proud to say that because John, in coordination with Regional Board, really did a good job. And because of that, actually, it became a non-issue per se, but we are closing the loop. I am in contact with the Regional Board about this just to see, when they're going to finalize that draft. But TMDL issues have not been an issue because of the effluent quality has improved greatly because of the modifications that have been made in the last few years.
All right. Thank you, Ray. I hope those answer the questions of the public. So, and thanks for being available, Ray. You're a little busier than usual today. Thank you. All right. Let's, if no one minds, let's move on and see if we can approve the consent agenda as quickly as possible.
I just have one question, President Farmer.
Yes.
On item C, it's just a clarification question.
Uh-huh.
Remember when we had this before us, that our district council was conflicted out of the contract process with CIO, and I noticed that this time it doesn't look like that's the case. Can you briefly, very briefly comment on that, Tim or John?
Mr. Carmel has his hand raised, so Tim, go right ahead, please.
That's why I have my hand up. I still have that conflict, so I can't participate in that item.
Then I would move approval of consent agenda item A, B, and D only.
All right. Well, thank you. Before we get a second on that, we have two directors that also have their hands up. So Director Pearson, go right ahead.
Yes, I had one correction to the minutes that Haley asked me to bring up at the meeting, and that was on page 44, I believe. It was recorded three ayes on a particular item, and it should be four. And she knows about it. She can make that correction.
All right. Thank you, David. And Director Howell? Don, it seems like you took your hand down. So there's a motion to approve consent agenda items A, B, and D. Okay, Don, you have your hand back in it.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. I pushed the wrong button. I just have a question regarding the on page 88 that we file with the county. On item number four, indicate whether the district or the candidate will pay for the printing handling of the statement of qualifications. How is that to be filled in? I think that's probably for the general manager. In other words, my question literally is, who pays? Because otherwise what we write could be a blank check. I need to know whether it's the district or the candidates that are planning to pay for this.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the whole question? Because you were garbled on my end.
My apologies. Okay, I'm on page 88. At the bottom of the page, there are some answers in the check boxes. This has to do with the application. This is the notice to the county elections office, which is how we what we are filing to have the consolidation with the general election. And item four on page 88, where it says, please indicate whether the district or the candidate will pay for the printing and handling of the statement of qualifications. Since nothing has yet been checked, I just would like to know what the intention is here in terms of who is going to pay for the printing and handling of the statement of qualifications. Did that make sense at all?
I can say that in the past, the candidate has paid for it.
Yes.
Yeah, that is correct.
Then, okay. I this really should have been presented to us with that filled in then. But I'm satisfied with that. But in the future, when we have something like this, it really should be filled in before we look at it. Okay?
All right. Well, thank you, Director Rice and Ms. Dodson, for clarifying that. So getting back to the original motion from Director Rice, which was consent for items A, B, and D, did you still wish to continue that motion, Director Rice, or just include the entire agenda item?
No, not the entire consent agenda.
Okay, so A, B, and D. So do
what are we going to do about C?
Tim Carmel is conflicted out, and his name is on the having reviewed it for legal consistency or whatever it usually has on our contracts. And if he's conflicted out, that means he probably shouldn't have his name on it, and we can't discuss it with him as part of the discussion.
So okay, we might have to pull that one until next week, next month or something.
Looks like it.
Right. I was just going to say it probably needs to go on one of the July agendas.
Our existing contract expires July 1st. So we'll have to add this to next week's agendas and the special board meeting, unless we want to have a second special board meeting.
President Farmer?
I was just going to ask you, Mr. Carmel, can we do that?
Yeah, there's no problem that my name is on the contract. I won't be signing the contract. That's just a clerical error. I didn't review the contract because I have a conflict of interest. It's our standard form contract, so I think you can proceed. We'll just have to correct the contract.
Okay, so we'll just white out your name, and hopefully that'll be satisfactory. Director Rice, how do you feel about that?
Can we vote on the motion that I've already made, and then we can take up C?
Sure. Okay. So do we have a second on Director Rice's motion?
Yeah, I'll second.
Thank you, Director Howell. Haley, could you have a roll call, please?
Sure. Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Vice President Steidel?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. So thank you, Haley. So let's go back to item C. And Director Rice, did you wish to make any further comments?
I would move approval. I just wanted to ensure that staff knows that this hasn't been, staff and the board knows this hasn't been reviewed by our legal counsel, because that would be a conflict for him and for the district. So I want to make sure that everybody's aware of that, because contracts are contracts and they need to be reviewed. So if it's the standard thing, I'm okay with approving it.
All right. Well, knowing what a stickler Director Howell is for contracts, I'm sure you're more than happy to have this happening, Director Howell. So do we have a second on the motion from Director Rice?
I'll second.
All right. So we have moved, seconded. Haley, could we have a roll call, please?
Sure. Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Howell? Vice President, Vice President Steidel?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. Thank you. So if we don't mind, let's move on to item number 7, hearings and appeals. And General Manager Weigold or Ms. Duffield, go ahead and introduce this item, please.
Sure. Agenda item 7A is a public hearing to discuss and consider adoption of Resolution 29-2020, approving the CCSD preliminary budget for fiscal year 2020 to 2021, and adoption of Resolution 30-2020, establishing the fiscal year 2020-2021 appropriations limit. Staff is recommending that the board discuss and consider adoptions of these two resolutions, establishing the 2021 appropriations limit and providing direction to staff as deemed appropriate. Before I pass it over to Pam for further comment, I'd like to make some introductory comments on this budget. This is my first, so I paid a lot of attention to detail on this. This was reviewed first with the finance manager and all the department heads. I then met with the finance manager and all the department heads. And then we reviewed it multiple times with the finance committee and individual members of the finance committee who has approved passing this and recommending approval to the board. In general, I think the district is on a very good trajectory with great momentum. I myself, when it comes to finances, consider myself conservative. And so in light of the COVID pandemic, back in late February, I asked all department heads to cease all discretionary spending. What we see reflected now in the budget is that that has led to surpluses pretty much across the board going into the end of the fiscal year. Now, Pam will tell you those are estimates right now. We won't have the final numbers until we close out June, the end of our fiscal year, and you'll look at those end results for the balance of this fiscal year in August. But we have a couple of things that weren't factored into these numbers because we didn't yet have them. So while we have made some budgetary items for the PG&E project, we have that total project, if we did every single project on it, total $17 million. Obviously, that's more, that's 150% of our entire CCSD budget. And we didn't put those in the budget because we still don't know what items we can get grants for, which items we're going to have to go with for loans. So we have a lot of sorting out to do. Those projects will be prioritized a little bit on money. So we have we also, in addition, have a long list of unfunded items that the department heads would love to have gotten into the budget this year, but there's just not enough there to fund everything. So as Pam will note, we have a separate list at the back of the budget as an attachment that outlines what was funded and what was not funded by department. Lastly, on the subject of reserves, I just want to share with the board that I think we have to have a more solid reserve policy. We have a reserve policy that's left of the board, but I think as we move ahead, we have to demonstrate to those we're going to seek loans from and grants from that we're in good financial condition. And I'd like to see staff work with the board on, and perhaps the finance committee on, solidifying a tighter reserve policy, because right now, with the exception of the administration fund, we don't have any emergency standby reserves in the case of some big issue. And so I think that's an issue that we need to talk about and think about going forward. With that, I'll pass it over to Pam for more discussion on the budget.
Okay, so we kind of talked on, just kind of talked about the process we go through to create the budget. And the only other item I'd like to add to that is how the CIP list was developed. So if you recall this time last year, when we were trying to come up with a really good reporting structure and we revamped the whole format of the budget worksheets and turned everything upside down, we worked with R&I to create the CIP list. So that list has continued to be worked on through this past fiscal year, and that is one of the items that will be in your attachment. So I just wanted to point out that along with the finance committee and all the staff effort that were put into the budget, throughout the whole year, staff worked with R&I to get the CIP list to the state that is in today, submitted with the budget. That is basically the purpose of the budget. The preliminary budget is to adopt the revenue and expenditure plan for the district for the fiscal year 2021. This is required by statute to be adopted by June 30 of each fiscal year. Going forward into August, we're also under a statutory deadline to adopt our final budget by August 31st of each fiscal year. The final budget is to close out our prior fiscal year. So in this case, it would be closing out fiscal year 1920 and recognizing any surplus or deficit that we have in any one of the funds. And then it would be carrying forward into the new year any contracts that are not completed on June 30, that are still ongoing, carrying forward multi-year capital project dollars. And all of that information is digested and will become our reserve balances into the new fiscal year. Some other items to note just overall on the packet before we get into some details is you're gonna see two different page numbers. So the top left-hand corner is the page number per the agenda packet. The bottom page number that you see is actually a component of the report itself, and that is useful when this is PDF'd on its own document on our website and utilized. It follows the narrative, and all those page numbers tie to the page numbers that you see on the bottom. So when I call out the pages in reference, I will talk to the pages to the bottom part of the budget packet, because that is what's into the narrative. So what is in the packet for you? So, of course, we have the staff report, and we have the two resolutions that we just talked about. We have the overall narrative and a lot of detail behind what happened in each one of the budget units. You know, what are the things that we're doing? What are our goals and objectives? What are significant impacts that we think throughout each one of the department budgets? Then you're going to come to all of the detailed worksheets. There will be a general fund summary page to summarize all the general fund budgets, and that's on page 17 or page 116. You're also going to see that same type recap for all of the enterprise funds. And let me get what page that is on. Sorry, get to the page. And that will be on page 49 or page 148 of the packet. And then we have a lot of attachments for information for you. We have, let's see, which all the attachments basically start on page 78. So we have the administrative cost allocation, how that's allocated to all the different departments and the percentages. We have the salary schedule that's adopted as part of the budget, and the salary schedule does include the SEIU rate increase or salary increases that were approved by the board, as well as the IAFF that go into effect at the beginning of the next calendar year. We also have the position allocation list. So this was a new list presented to your board last year. Before, it was something called like a headcount or something, and this basically is just displaying what was adopted in the 1920 budget and how there's been changes in each department's staffing up and down. Also attached for your information are two org charts. There's one on page 81 and one on page 82. Page 81 lists what the district looks like today, and page 82 is what the district will look like going into the new fiscal year when all the minor changes to staffing has occurred. Moving forward to page 83, you'll see three pages, which is the most current version of the CIP list. It's been color-coded to help. Just call out which projects are completed, which projects are in process, which ones are not started yet. And then the yellow highlighting is just to highlight what items are within the fiscal year budget request. Moving forward to page 86, that is, there's two pages there that relates to every single request that each department made as part of the budget. And then there's a column that tells you if that is funded or not funded. We provided this to you last year for the first time, and the Finance Committee found it very helpful to look at this list, and I believe the board did as well. So it's just kind of a good picture in time on, you know, what can we fund and what can't we fund? And it kind of makes us think a little bit going forward about what we need to do differently and things we may need to modify. Finding revenue, that's a big deal. And then the last item attached for you is on page 88, and that is the first draft of estimated reserves. Keep in mind, this has some estimates in it because our 18-19 fiscal year is not yet audited. So I don't expect there to be any major changes with that, but there could just be minor moves between the funds or capital assets or whatever. And assuming all of the budget dollars, it also makes the assumption of where we're going to end fiscal year 19-20. And, you know, as John mentioned, that's just a guess based on what we knew at the beginning or at the end of the third quarter. So, you know, we know, as he mentioned, things have changed. So those numbers are going to vary a little bit, but we just don't expect them to be substantially different you know, they're going to be a little different, but it's not going to be hundreds of thousands of dollars either way. We don't expect there to be that giant of a flux. So moving forward to the meat of the budget, in the general fund, that encompasses the fire department, facilities and resources, parks, rec, and open space, and administration. I went into a lot of detail with the finance committee on every single request and every single department, but I'm not going to do that because of our time constraints and just because you guys probably don't want to hear all those words coming out of me. So I'm just going to kind of give you some highlights for each of the departments and then kind of talk through, you know, deficits and surpluses that each of the general fund and the enterprises have. So for the fire department, they pretty much have the same revenue and expense they've had in past years. It's very similar. The only thing to highlight for fire is that phase two of the radio grants is happening. We have budgeted both for the revenue coming in, the grant revenue that we expect to come in as the grant from the county, and then the offsetting expenditure to purchase those radios. For facilities.
Excuse me, Pat, I'm sorry, but if you're referencing a particular page that we can look at, could you give that to us, please?
Sure, we can go to the page if you'd like. So the fire department, it would be page 20 or page 119 of your packet.
Okay, thank you.
And so that first line, you will see the grant for the radios, which is $30,000, and we're referencing column K, because that is our new year, that's our proposed budget column. And then the offsetting expense to that, which is the actual purchase of the radios, is on page 25 or page 124. And you will see it on line 159, the offsetting expenditure for phase one of the radios occurred in fiscal year 1920, and then phase two will be occurring in fiscal year 2021. So moving forward to facilities and resources, they begin on page 28. Facilities and resources. There's just some overall increased requests for maintenance of the trees, maintenance of vacant lots, homeless encampment cleanup, and we can't really fund a whole person to help the facilities group out, so we've created some budgetary line this year or maybe some temporary staffing. So just to help during those really peak times of the year when they're doing a lot of weeding and tree trimming, we're hoping to get some temporary help assistance in to help the facilities manager and his staff manage all those projects. For the capital side, there's a request for a storage trailer, and that is part of the new homeless policy that's being worked on by the policy committee currently. And the requirement in there will be that the CCSD would have to store personal belongings of these individuals. So at this point in time, we have no facility to keep all of those belongings. So they would need to purchase some sort of a storage facility. Or if that's not approved, then we would have to rent something. Also included is a purchase of replacing a 1999 vehicle. That we would assume we would do sometime in the spring when the current, we have one debt service payment currently that will be paid off in the spring. So at the time that that is paid off, then we will start procuring another vehicle and we assume that it would be financed. So hopefully that amount of money will stay static and we'll just continue that debt service payment with his next new vehicle. For PROS, they're continuing with the skate park repairs and also putting the remaining money for that budget to hopefully design of the skate park, and then a small budget to a grant writer. Hopefully they'll be able to get some grant money out there, but there are some resources that are needed in order to do that. So for administration, the request is that we increase the clerical assistant that the board approved in December for 24 hours a week, or up to 24 hours a week. And we're requesting to increase that to 40 hours to help the district as a whole. It's not just for administration, it's also to help fire out and to also help facilities out, because they have no administrative staff other than the few of us that are in the office, and they really do need some additional resources. We've also requested various technology and training efficiency improvements within the budget. And then we've also included the interfund loan payback from wastewater, which is also in the offsetting side, is the payout on the wastewater side. So overall, let me get back to my staff report. Overall, the general fund is requesting to use reserves in a total of $17,848 in this budget, which I consider that a balanced budget. It's pretty close. You're never going to be exactly zero, so it's a pretty close budget to submit. Moving on to the enterprise funds. So the enterprise funds as a whole for fiscal year 19-20, as we've talked through all of our emergency meetings and some through the rate increase meetings as well, we've talked about the revenue loss that occurred during the last billing cycle, and then what we can predict going into the May-June billing cycle, which we won't know until the middle of July. So we put those revenue assumptions for the reduced revenue in for fiscal year 19-20. And then the rate increase approval by the board, postponing the rate increase until September 1st. That also makes an impact to the revenues for the fiscal year. So when we look at the worksheet fund by fund, you will see some variances between what we're budgeting and what Prop 218 had indicated the revenue stream would be. Some staffing changes that are happening across all the enterprise fund budgets. So the board requested, I think it was two meetings ago, to increase the limited term position that we had, the administrative technician that was assisting utilities for the water conservation and the points database. They requested to increase that position to a full-time position. So we've included that in the budget, a full-time position. And then there's also a request to do the second phase of the utilities reorganization, and that is to change the management analyst position to a program manager position. So that kind of goes across every single one of the funds. It's split like 33% to each fund, to water, to SWF, and to wastewater. And then overall in all the enterprise funds, you'll see two more columns appear in the budget worksheets, which are the comparisons to the Prop 218 assumptions and how that compares to the budget. So moving forward on the colored worksheets to the water fund, let's see what page that. So the water fund overall on page 49, you will see an overall summary of all the enterprise funds, all the revenues, all the expenses, and the surpluses and reserves that are anticipated. And then moving forward to page 51, is the water fund itself. That's the summary page of the water fund. So some of the highlights of expense requests in the water fund are the establishing an annual tank maintenance and rehabilitation program. That's something that currently doesn't exist in our system. So every year there has to be, each of the tanks is inspected, but there's no money in the current budget if repairs or painting or any kind of maintenance has to occur after those inspections. So there's a whole line item in the budget for that actual project. So that is on page, what am I on? Page 54. And it's on line 89. We have an annual tank inspection. Oh, sorry, it's on page 90. I'm on the wrong line. Overall, there's some building maintenance between water and wastewater. They've had some deferred maintenance to the different buildings. So you're going to see some building maintenance requests in water, and you're also going to see them in wastewater. We previously talked about this a little bit, I think in the utility manager report, that there's going to be some enhancements to the retrofit and rebate programs. Those are also in the budget, and they could be offset by a grant. We do not know if we have, we haven't been told if we received a grant yet, not for the rebates, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so we're still waiting to hear if we will get that other grant for the, to continue those flow meters. Well, yeah, the flow meter continuance. Also included in their budgets are the capital improvement requests, and they are in line with the approved CIP list. So you will see all of those, you know, if you wanted to look at the CIP list and make sure that all the items in there are being compared, you know, if they've been approved, they're on the CIP list, they are in there, we've done that verification. And at the end of the day, the water fund is proposed to have a surplus of $523,000 at the end of fiscal year 2021. So again, keep in mind that, you know, there's still some things that are coming down the pipe as far as the PG&E IGA project that could absorb that. And then as the utility manager mentioned, they're going to move forward with, you know, selecting a vendor for the water meter replacement program. So that may significantly change the budget request as well, because, you know, we've not budgeted the full amount. It's probably $1 million or more, and we don't have that collectively in our budget. So we would have to do some financing or, you know, phasing of the meters or something. So there are some things coming down in the very near future that would be special requests during a quarterly report or an isolated report to the board that could change that surplus. Moving on to SWF, operations and capital, which that begins on page 59. So in SWF operations, there's two items to highlight. There's the professional service agreement that for the biological monitoring. And then moving into reserves, I just wanted to point out, which is on page 64, that we are following the Bartle Wells study and putting in the SWF two-month operational reserves projected at 180,000 if we were needing to run the plant. In SWF capital, there are no new requests. We will be carrying forward contracts because there are current contracts in place with a couple of different vendors. So we will be carrying those contracts forward into the new year. Moving forward to wastewater. And wastewater begins on page 70. If you look, let's fast forward a moment to, I guess we can just look at page 70. So if you look at page 70 and if you look on line 44, you will see that there is a significant amount of reserves predicted for fiscal year 1920 for wastewater. And then if you look, and this is column I, and if you look at column K, you will see the reverse. So we're assuming we were carrying all of those, those surplus funds over, those reserves would be carried over, and we would utilize them in the new fiscal year to fund the budget request. Again, building and grounds maintenance, you're going to see several items throughout the budget for wastewater to take care of some deferred maintenance. And then the capital improvement projects are per the CIP list. You might notice that wastewater did not get funded for two projects. If you look at the department request / funded, no funded list. And the reason those two projects were not, or the two purchases of equipment is basically what they were, they were not approved, is because those have not been vetted out through the R&I committee yet, and they're not on the existing CIP list. So that could be something that will be coming through the committees and maybe a budget adjustment later during the fiscal year. So let's talk about the admin allocation list. So that concludes basically all the highlights of each division's budget and all their requests and what is funded. So the administrative overhead allocation report, which is on 78, this methodology is the same as what was used in the current fiscal year, and I think has been used for the last, I think this is maybe the fourth fiscal year that the same methodology has been used. We did review this with the Finance Committee to just ensure we were still all on the same page, and that's the same methodology that we would like to be using for this budget cycle. And that methodology basically takes all of the expenses in the administrative department's budget, and it allocates it out in different ways to all the different departments. And if you recall last year, we had a huge amount of discussion on, we had this in the Finance Committee meetings, and then we also had this at the board level, that last year was the first year that we made the decision to move the allocated overhead in SWF operating and SWF capital and put that all under the water fund. And we did that because of the way the Bartle Wells rate structure was put into place. That was moved as part of that rate structure. So if you look at the approved pages in Scenario B of the rate structure and you look into SWF, you do not see any administrative overhead, but you see a significant increase in administrative overhead in the water fund. So to align everything and to try to measure our rates and the rates that we're receiving against our operations, we elected to make that move. So when you're looking through the budgets, if you do not see allocated overhead in SWF, you will see that it all sits in the water fund. And in the water fund, I have it in three separate lines. I have it as the water fund allocation, the SWF ops, and SWF capital. So you'll see that detailed. Let's see. I don't think there's anything more to talk about in the org chart. Again, just to talk real quick about the funded and not funded items, that's on page, 86 and 87. You know, that is a nice, good list. Our thought right now is that we're going to hopefully take this list and create a general fund capital list. We want to work with resource and infrastructure, you know, over the next few months and develop a general fund capital project list that's prioritized. We made a large effort last year at the beginning of the budget cycle to do that, and it's continuing through the year for the enterprise funds, but we really don't have a good picture of what really is out there and exists for the general fund. So we think that's a really prudent thing to do over the next few months, and then present that maybe at a quarterly report or something to the board, whether it happens in the first quarter, hopefully the first quarter, or the second quarter. So I think that's all I have, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
All right. Well, considering the time element, do we have any brief questions from any of the members of the board with regard to Ms. Duffield? And, yes. Director Pearson, go right ahead.
And do we want to take public comment first?
Well, that's right. Thank you. Well, yeah, let's take public comment first. Thank you, David.
Okay, I do have one member of the public that wishes to speak, and that's Christine Heinrichs.
Thank you. Go right ahead, Christine.
Thank you. Dr. Bettenhausen has pointed out in other communications the misleading accounting of EWS expenses, attributing the $1.1 million to it and then putting the over $400,000 in administrative costs in the other column. And of course, that doesn't include the $100,000 contractor recently hired for required studies to support the coastal development permit either, more than $1.5 million on this non-functioning plant. As elected representatives, you know well that the amount of money available to the district is limited. You are making choices as to how to spend that money. Your vote in favor of this budget approves of spending this money not on improvements in water storage, such as replacement of the Stewart Street water tank, which is years past its useful life, not on replacing the rusty water pipes that are constantly leaking, losing water that the EWS is supposed to provide, not for a forest manager to improve the health of the forest and help in fire prevention, not on improvements to the aging wastewater treatment plant, which is estimated to need now $17 million of updates, not on repairs to the vets hall. Directors often have favorite projects. Later in this meeting is a proposal for electric vehicle charging stations. No money for those when so much is going to the EWS. That's what you're choosing by voting for this budget. I ask you to reconsider, remove funding for this project, except to mothball it, and put Cambria's money to work for projects that benefit Cambria. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrichs. Now I'll bring this back to the board for discussion. And let me just say this. Since moving till 5 o'clock also includes our closed agenda, closed session agenda items, do we have any suggestions as to how to proceed, not just with this item right here? And I see Director Pearson has his hand up. How we proceed with this particular item, but the remainder of the agenda versus what we have to deal with in closed session. So, Director Pearson, go right ahead.
Okay, well, I was just going to comment on the finances and the budget. I've got quite a few notes here that I'd like to go through, if that's all right.
Yes. Well,
So on page 113 of the thing, there's goals to be done, and I think the sanitary sewer management plan goals need to be added to that. On page 139, the admin department has more money set aside now for a temporary, even though they're hiring another person. I'm confused there. I don't agree with hiring another person in the admin department, period. And if you do hire that person, I think it needs to be on a temporary basis. I understand that you have a missing workload, but and that needs to be filled, but eventually you're going to fill that workload position and move along. So I don't see any reason to add a permanent position with all of the attendant PERS and retirement benefits, et cetera, that go along with that. I would much rather have that be a temporary position until the admin department is sorted out and reorganized, and then you get a better idea as to where we're at. Also on page 179, which I guess is page 80 of your thing there, there's a retired Nuent still on the list. I'm not sure exactly who that would be or what that person would be for. The budget to me leans very heavily towards the water and wastewater enterprises, and I'm okay with that. But at the same time, I think the Facilities and Resources Department and the Fire Department and PROS is getting shortchanged, and the Admin Department is going to end up with another $158 plus the loan repayment, so it's really $250 that are going to go into reserves. I would like to see at least some of that money spent on the maintenance that hasn't been done on the facilities and resources area and on the fire department area. I think that there's room to get that done. My last question, and this is really a question. I thought we were going to put the reserves for running the plant and offloading the brine in a separate line item in a separate fund so that we knew exactly how much we were collecting year by year and how much we had in there total. As I look at what's there on the page 187, it indicates kind of that we've now got $187,000 for 1920 going into that, and then another $180,000 in 2021 going into that. And I'd like to make sure that that's true, that we've now got that money set aside so that if we ever have to run that plant, we've got plenty of money to haul off the brine and stuff. So that question, at least, I'd like to get answered.
Ms. Duffield is in a as brief time element as possible. Can you reply to some of the comments or all of the comments that Director Pearson has made? Ms. Duffield?
Sorry, we were delayed in unmuting. Apologies. So where do you want me to start? Do you want me to start at the beginning or the end?
Why don't you start with the last question, since it seemed like that was when he was...
That's going to be a question? Okay. So I do have the budget. When we're looking at this budget, you're looking on page 163, I'm assuming. When we look at the SWF operational budget, it is reflected that there's $173,000 in there, and we made the decision to put that in reserves, and it's identified as additions to reserves for 2 months of operations. We never said we were going to put that in a separate fund. Then it's part of the rate structure that currently exists. It's not a separate component of the rate structure. It's just part of the base and the volume charges that exist. So we have that sitting there in the budget. It's in red on that on line 188. And the amount that was in the Bartles and Wealth study initially was $166,000. And then there was a 4% increase, which is how you get to the 1920 amount of 173. If that is not used, it'll go into reserves and move into the next year. In 2021, we're following the study again, and 180,000 is what would the assumed cost be to run the plant. That would include the brine off hauling, the additional electric costs, lab testing, and just various factors that were outlined in the study. So we have done that to align with the study and to align with the rate.
So we're not accumulating money, we're just setting aside it every year?
Correct. That's how the rate study was set up. We were to set the money aside in case we had to run the plant. If we do have to run the plant, we have to come to the board and we have to ask the board to take money from reserves into operations, and we would create specific operational accounts so that we would only move what the cost actually were. You know, we're not going to move the full $173,000 if it only costs us $120,000 to do that operation. You know, or the reverse. Maybe it costs us $200,000 to do the two-month operation, not $173,000. So, you know, once that decision is made to run the plant, we would still have to come back to the board to move those reserve funds up into funds that we can utilize in services and supplies.
Okay, so how many months of operation will $180,000 cover?
It's anticipated that that is 2 months of operations.
Okay, so what do we do if we have 3 months or 4 months of operation that we need?
Well, then our reserve transfer would have to be greater.
Well, I thought that's why we were going to set aside this monies every year into a separate reserve fund that would accumulate so that when we had a severe drought, we would have $500,000 that we would be able to then spend on that.
Now, if you look at the rate study pages, it is not an accumulated number.
All right. I think that needs to be addressed by the finance committee.
It was addressed last year. We had lengthy discussions about it, but we can revisit it again.
Yes, I think so. Thank you.
Did you wish any other questions of yours to be addressed, Director Pearson, or can I move on to other directors that also have concerns and questions?
I guess the only other one is who the retired annuitant is that's on there.
That would be the former district engineer. We have to keep him on the books as an expert witness. If you recall, during last budget year, we had two retired annuitants. We had the former finance manager and we had the district engineer. So we've had to continue the district engineer as a retired annuitant. That's the only way we can have him on our books, and it's required through PERS that we have him listed on the salary schedule as such.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Well, looks like everybody wishes to contribute here. I just want to let us know that we're at the two-hour area now. And we still have closed session that we do need to get to, if I'm not mistaken. So it may easily be that this might be the last item on the regular agenda that we deal with today. So let's move over. Everybody else has their hand up. Director Rice, I believe you were first. Director Rice, if you would go ahead and...
I'm getting there, sorry. I couldn't get my different equipment today. So the first thing I'd like to say is thank you so much to Ms. Stutfield and to Mr. Weigold for working so hard on this budget and working through the Finance Committee. Thank you very much, Vice President Stidell, and to all the volunteers that serve on that committee. I am heartened by the fact there are lots of red numbers, but those are for prior budget years, and we're now looking much, much better. And that's partly a function of Ms. Duffield and the Finance Committee, which is very aptly chaired by Vice President Stidell. Thank you for doing that. A budget expresses what our values and priorities are. And I think that's something that all the board members understand or should and pay attention to. One of the things that I'm looking at, and I'm on page 185 in my packet, it's the department line budget requests, the funded and unfunded list. I'm just noticing there's a huge unfunded amount compared with the line item request amount in fire and a teeny tiny amount in administration. And I just want to ask some very specific questions about this worksheet. One is, and I've kind of always taken this position, whenever there's
truck that we need to replace. I don't just want to know what the oldest truck is in that department. I'd like to know what all the, how many trucks are in a certain department or cars or whatever, how many vehicles that department already has, because I understand we need to replace old trucks, but we seem to be on there's a lot of trucks being purchased. I'd like to see a vehicle inventory. I'm not sure why we're having a premium increase on the liability insurance. I realize that's not something we really have discretion over, and we need to fund that. But and I don't need an answer, but I just noticed that seems to be a fairly large amount. I also don't know what the NeoGov recruiting learning license and one-time setup. I don't know what that is. Seems to me there's we could take some of that general fund monies and help provide funding for some of the requests that were made in the fire department, like for example on the computers that might need to be replaced, or the fuel station computer replacement, which seems to me to be something that would need to be done so we're accurately recording the fuel consumption. And I'm just curious on the strategic planning consultant, why we're funding that and what that's for. Those are my concerns on those. I feel like the fire department was kind of short shift, and admin kind of got all the line items they were hoping to get. So if, I don't know if that's something you can address right now, but maybe more comments for future, for when we get back to this in August.
I can address the fire department real quick. So if you keep in mind that very first line for the fire department is a significant amount, because that was to fund 3 firefighters. So if you take that $300 out of their request, you know, it's a very different bottom line. Oh, sorry, your mic's off. You're muted.
Director Rice, you need to unmute.
I understand why we're not. Thank you.
We can hear.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. I should have said with the exception of that first line item, because obviously that's something that's a much bigger than we can fund. The last thing I do want to mention is we should be thankful we aren't funding our fire department or anything else based on either sales tax or bed tax, because we'd be in a whole world, different world of hurt right now with our funding issues. I'm glad the GM cut back in February. I'm glad that we didn't have as much of a budget impact as we might have had otherwise, had we been relying on sales or bed tax to fund the district. Thank you. Now I'm done.
Thank you, Director Rice, for that astute observation at the end of your comment. Moving on, I believe Vice President Steidel, you have your hand up first, so go right ahead.
I'm sorry, can we still answer one of Director Rice's questions?
Well, my apologies. Yes, go right ahead. Thank you.
You mentioned the strategic planning, so that's the strategic consultant that will facilitate the staff and board strategic plan in the first or second quarter.
In the workshop.
Workshop, correct.
Workshop.
And what's the NeoGov?
So the NeoGov is a continuation of our efforts to automate all our business processes. So NeoGov is a consolidated, the actual bid was probably double or triple that amount. I cut that down to a bare bones for the coming fiscal year. It allows us to package all of our training, evaluations, automates everything. This is in line with what a lot of the other districts are doing.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Weigel. Did that answer your question, Director Rice?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm looking down at the, see you unmute yourself and you're shaking your head. So cool. All right, let's move on now. We have two other directors that wish to make comments. Vice President Steidel.
there. I appreciate the position that Director Pearson has regarding the admin person, and the potential for it being a temporary is certainly something worth consideration. But I guess I'd like to verbalize a little bit and make sure that people understand that it isn't just a matter of adding bodies in some way, that we've garnered the benefit of all three of our advisory committees that we've got going right now, the R&I, the finance, and the policy. Each one of them has an infrastructure in terms of administrative support that talks to the agenda packages, their distribution, their keeping track of things and actions. That has significantly increased the work support that needs to be provided administratively to the district. In addition to that, we moved from one board meeting to two board meetings a month, which we've been doing for a little while now, but we're really seeing the effect of some of that overload. And we are not deep in staff in this district. We've managed to start developing staff in our enterprises and gain some of that depth, and we're seeing the results of that immediately. But I just want to say this is such a small piece of the things that we have to make decisions about monetarily. And the fact that we've got an administrative staff that's being consumed and overrun by the demands of not only the board, but of the committees themselves and the other things that come at them. I definitely support the idea of having that additional administrative support. The last thing we need to do is consume the great resources that we've got working for us in the administrative area by having them, you know, work double digits in hours per day, and oftentimes that going over the Friday that they would normally be off, or even into a weekend. So I think that we're shooting ourselves in the foot for is a very small piece of the monies we have to make decisions about. The liability insurance, just for your reference, we did, and the Finance Committee, go over that significantly because we felt that number increase was extraordinary. And there are a couple of things. Of course, as a district, we're limited in who we can go to get our liability insurance, but there are natural increases that happen in just any kind of insurance industry. But we also added a lot of equipment and purchases relative to vehicles and the fire truck and any number of other things, which of course carry a higher rate of insurance than what the old assets represented. So we found that the liability insurance increase was driven by those things. And that's it. Thank you.
All right. Vice President Steidel, thank you for your comments. I know the Director House had his hand up for a while, but I believe Director Pearson might want to have an added comment on what you just said. So why don't we go back to you, David?
I think we're getting overloaded, and I looked at a couple of other districts. And if you look at the other districts that have similar organization and budgets that we do, we've got more people than any of them. I think there are efficiencies that are being taken care of by the general manager, and they're doing a good job of those. And I think that once we get the new finance system on board, I think we'll see more efficiencies. And I just think that it's a mistake to bring on a permanent person and at this time when the organization of the administrative group is unknown. When I get a chance, my recommendation on the resolution is to move forward with the budget, but with changing that to a temporary position.
Right, Director Howell.
Thank you. I would second Dave's suggestion, Director Pearson's suggestion. It really concerns me to increase our full-time permanent headcount at this point. In particular, there's a number of automation efforts afoot in the district, including what General Manager Weigel just mentioned. So I think it would be wise to not permanently increase the headcount until these improvements have been made. And so my suggestion would be, can you hear me? Can you all hear me? My suggestion would be that if this position is needed, that it be a temporary position. A number of reasons. The district gets into hard times and we have to start cutting people. We don't want to cut permanent employees, you know, so why get ourselves in that position? The other thing is I'm very impressed with what I think Tyler Rincote's going to do, and plus the software that General Manager Weigel mentioned as well. So I think it would be premature to create, to add a permanent position to the headcount at this time. However, I actually have a question. And so if I may ask the question, I note that sick leave and vacation pay are not budgeted. So how do we account for that? And is it that no one's going to get sick or go on vacation?
So we never budget for that, but what we show you is what the actual costs are. So that's a lot of times why our salary line looks like we have a lot of salary savings. But if you add that line with the sick and the vacation lines, those all add up together. I don't like that we call it out. I don't even know why we call it out. To me, it's just part, it's like calling out holiday pay or something. It's just part of the normal encompassing of somebody's salary and benefit package. We assume that they're going to work 2,080 hours in a year. So why we separate it out on lines, I don't even really know.
Good.
Apparently a board asked for that to be separated. I was told when I first got here, I was told that some of the board members had over in the past years had wanted that to be separated. So they kept reporting it like that. But it just kind of skews your salary numbers a little bit if you don't know to take that number and then look down four lines and add those other numbers to it.
That's good to know. I was concerned that we may be getting accrued vacation or something and we're not budgeting for it.
I budget for 2,080 hours for every employee, and then it's a higher amount for fire because fire staff works a different work schedule than the management staff and the SEIU union members.
Okay. Mr. Weigel seemed to want to add to that.
Well, it's just for Director Howell. I was just going to respond also for that additional clerical request going from 24 to 48 hours. So part of that also is building in capacity for the fire chief and for the facilities manager. So as you know, the facilities manager, we're now managing upwards of 500 parcels plus the Fiscalini Ranch. For any time to take Carlos out of the field is time away from handling all those events. The fire chief also is currently dual hatted as the fire marshal. He has certain duties he's required to do there, but we've also saddled him right now with the administrative because that's an unfunded position at the firehouse. So the thinking here on my part right now is to be able to handle all these as part of this additional clerical person. So it's overflow work from the additional work from those two managers, plus the additional load from as we stood up the standing committees and they're feeding more administrative requirements to feed the board with staff reports and research, et cetera. That's that's to handle all that.
Thank you. Yeah, I wasn't proposing that you don't have the extra hours. I'm only concerned with the permanence of the position.
Same here. I agree.
A subject,
keep in mind the board approved adding this position back in December as a part-time position. So we're not requesting a new position today. What we're requesting is to take it from part-time, which the board had already approved, to full-time. But we haven't even hired the person yet.
Yeah, so. And by the way, you should know that I'm not in a hurry to hire somebody. I'm with you. I want to see how things balance out. But right now, we're really stretched.
Okay. I'm really not contradicting any of that. In fact, I really like the way the budget is presented and what you've done. I do have, this is actually more for future agenda, but I'm going to say it now because it's germane, is that I'm really concerned with the fact that the administrative costs for the what you are calling the SWF, that is being paid by the water fund. So what that amounts to is the water fund subsidizing the facility. And we know a significant portion of this community, when they did not object to the rate increase, it was with the understanding that the water fund would not be subsidizing this new plant, this new water plant. So I really want that on the future agenda, because I think that the administrative costs need to be, it's not realistic to me, regardless of what Bartle Wells said, to put it in that way. And the other thing is, as a member of the community, listening to Bartle Wells' presentation, and I listened to it quite carefully, the implication that I took away, which is this exact same understanding that Director Pearson took away, which is that the money that is collected every year when the facility is not running will be, as it were, banked so that it can be used for drought years when the facility needs to be run. And there was actual discussion, and if you need be, I'll... So that needs to be a future agenda item also, because the issue here is how that extra money is going to be handled. So I see two future agenda items that probably need to be addressed and probably need to be addressed before the budget is approved. Let me see. There were three. Yes. There's another one, but it's not germane to this topic. So the two things are how the reserves for the water facility that are sequestered every year, whether they should be carried forward or not, and earmarked for that purpose. And the other issue has to do with how the administrative cost allocation is being done by the SWF. Now, please do understand, this is no criticism of the finance manager, general manager, anybody. This is really a board issue that I want to have brought forth. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Director Howell. So we have a request for public comment on this item, and then we're going to Director Rice. I just want us to consider the fact that we still have two items in closed session. So in that regard, we're probably winding this meeting down and taking the rest of the items and making them on the July agendas, which are fairly light at this particular time. So let me go to public comment and Tina Dickerson. Tina?
Yes, thank you, President Farmer. I got in on this portion of the meeting when Director Pearson was making comments about reserves for the SWF and for the hauling of waste. So as a member of the public, I have to say that when I look at the way staff is constructed, as it were, or structured, if we're short of staff for certain tasks, which is really rather incredible, because I too, like Director Pearson, have looked at other agencies within the county, we have way more staff than any other that is comparable, way more. And to keep adding, is ridiculous. Our census, we went actually down by between 400 and 500 people
in this town. Not the current census, we don't have the results, but in the previous one. But what I'm going to say is, why don't we start having staff work 5 days a week and stop this nonsense of every other Friday off? Let's work a full week and let's address this issue by everyone working a full week. I mean, if you've got these issues, then you need to address them in a fiscally responsible way and a responsible way beyond just to get it done without costing the ratepayers more and more and more money. We are sick of it. And you've got to, if you all are taking this responsibly, then you need to look at how we cut, not how we add. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dickerson. Director Rice.
I would move adoption of Resolution 29-2020, approving the CCSD preliminary budget for fiscal year 2020-2021, and Resolution 30-2020, establishing the fiscal year 2020-2021 appropriations limit, with the additional comment about the additional position be either a limited term or temporary until a larger restructuring might take place. And the other input that the directors have given.
Do I hear a second on this motion?
I'll second that. Thank you.
All right.
I just have one quick comment. One of the things we are missing, and I'm not sure who's handling this area right now, is we need to be cognizant of the fact we do not have somebody that's specifically for HR, and that's a significant liability area that we need to be paying a good attention to. So I would just urge staff to consider that when you're thinking about positions and responsibilities for those positions.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Director Rice. So we have a motion and a second. Do we have any further comments from the board before we move this on for a vote? I don't see any comments. I just want to add one more item that no one else.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to clarify the last sentence that Director Rice had indicated was, and other things noted by the board in talking about this review. So I heard something very specific that you were putting in, but I'm not sure what that statement meant.
Okay. Let me clarify. So we were discussing there, I don't believe there were any other changes that seemed to have a consensus across the board, but there was some conversation that may provide some context in the larger sense. The only specific thing is the specific thing. But I think that having the staff consider the fuller discussion and the concerns of each board member, even if it wasn't a specific consensus majority, because I do agree it should be a limited term or temporary, and it can be changed into a permanent full-time. And I don't have a problem having it be full-time, but, you know, that's why I feel confident I can say we have a majority consensus on that issue.
Okay, excellent.
Does that help?
Yes, thank you for the clarification.
Sure.
All right. I see no other comments, so I just want to add one more thing. And this has been a fairly lengthy discussion on this particular item of at least an hour and 15 minutes. And so I want to thank the public comment, but especially the members of the board for being very, how could we say it, very involved in everything that's been discussed here and having very pertinent comments and questions. I just want to make one more that hasn't been addressed yet. And I'm noticing in the organizational chart for the coming fiscal year that we're creating a new position for a present a staff member, but getting a new position with an increase in pay, as well as an assistant for the remainder of the year. So just another situation to maybe to question if that needs to take place. So we have a motion by Director Rice and a seconded by Director Pearson. Haley, could we have a roll call vote, please?
Sure. Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Steidel?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Well, I feel really reluctant, but with all the hard work that Ms. Duffield has done, I'll make it unanimous and aye.
Okay.
And the Finance Committee as well. So, so we still have remaining, which we're not going to cover right now. We still have remaining regular business and the board member committee and liaison reports. And we'll add them on to July agenda meetings, like I said, which are pretty light at this time.
President Farmer?
Yes.
I understand. I understand what you're trying to do. There's an urgency to item C that and to item D, which were both put on. I think we should try and go through them. We also have a meeting next week that we can push items to instead of waiting till July. So I just wanted to raise that because I understand we're trying to get through the meeting prior to 5, including the closed session. Right. But we do have a meeting next week that we could push to instead of having to wait for July since the staff reports are already completed.
Okay. All right. So you said items D and C. You're referencing what?
The designation of a public forum and the discussion about the ad hoc committee regarding board member participation at standing committee meetings.
I have a question too on number A. Yeah. Is the emergency going to expire if we don't pass that again?
Yeah.
Yes, I recommend President Farmer that we also address 8A. It shouldn't take too long.
Okay, well, let's just move on to regular business and maybe exclude item B for another time. So here we are, regular business item A, and General Manager Weigel, would you introduce that, please?
Yes, President Farmer, agenda item 8A is discussion and consideration of adoption of Resolution 31-2020. Declaring a continued local emergency in the Cambria Community Services District due to the coronavirus pandemic. Staff recommends that the board discuss and consider adoption of Resolution 31-2020, declaring a continued local emergency in the Cambria Community Services District due to the coronavirus pandemic.
Okay. Right. Thank you, General Manager Weigold. I see a couple of hands up, including Ms. Duffield. No, as well as Ms. Duffield. So first, Director Pearson.
That was my hand on Pam's machine.
Okay. Director Pearson has taken his hand down. Director Rice.
I would, did the General Manager have something he wanted to add to the report? And if there's no public comment, I would make the motion.
Go right ahead, please.
I would move adoption of Resolution 31-2020, declaring a continued local emergency in the Cambria Community Services District due to the coronavirus pandemic.
And I'll second that. All right. So, Haley, we have a motion and a second. Roll call vote, please.
Please, under discussion, please.
Nope.
Sorry to be rushing everything here. Do we have any discussion on this item?
I just wanted to reiterate something that Ms. Dickinson reported at the beginning of the meeting, that the governor of the state of California has made masks outdoors mandatory, that face coverings need to be used when you're in a taxi, rideshare, public transit. This new order is important for people to be following because there's a reason, and that's one of the reasons why I support this continuing resolution and about declaring an emergency. So please, please, please wear masks if you're going to be indoors in public places where other people are.
Thank you, Director Rice, for that thoughtful comment. And thank you, Ms. Dickinson, for bringing that up earlier in the meeting. Thank you once again, Director Rice, for that important message. So getting back to this item, we have a motion and a second, and I don't mind being interrupted and handing this off to Haley for a roll call vote, please.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Howe? Vice President Steidel?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. Let's move on to item 8C, and let me hand this one off also to General Manager Weigold.
Mr. President Farmer, agenda item 8C is discussion and consideration of designation of public forum on district property. Staff is recommending that the Board of Directors review this staff report and consider and discuss allowing signs on district property and creating a designated public forum. As our district council had prepared, I want to afford him an opportunity to present some of his findings.
I don't have much to add, and I'll be really brief. So you'll remember a couple of Black Lives Movement signs were posted at the skate park and taken down after complaints were received. This item's to consider designating the skate park or another district property as a designated public forum, which would essentially give the people the unrestricted right to post signage. No matter how objectionable or offensive a sign might be, it would be allowed. It's a very complicated issue. It's fraught with potential problems, inability to regulate, potential liability, offensive signage, litter, which is weighed against the public's right to speak. And I'd be glad, I'm not an expert in this area, which is First Amendment rights, but I'd be glad to try to answer any questions.
Haley, do we have any, I believe we have at least one public comment on this item.
Yeah, I do have one public comment to read, and it's from Martha Goodwin. And the comment is, this is a very important time in history, which Canberra needs to be a part of. Black Lives Matter, and we need to reflect that we embrace all humans, regardless of skin tone. Please keep the crosses. They are a reminder why this change in our nation is necessary. Thank you, Martha Goodwin, Cambria resident.
Thank you, Ms. Goodwin. So let's open this up for board discussion and Director Rice.
So I agree with the public comment that was made, and whether I agree with the content of the sign that were posted or not is immaterial. My oath of office, I said twice. I, Amanda Christine Rice, do solemnly affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California. I am not doing that if I do not allow for properties that are owned by the public. It's not just the district. The public owns them because this is a public agency. I think it is whether the fact that they were taken down after some complaints, that's a bully tactic. We don't know how many people put them up. It doesn't matter what the content is. And the answer to speech you don't like is more speech. Somebody didn't like those. They did not say BLM anywhere on them. They had only the names of human beings who have been assaulted and murdered by law enforcement officials. It wasn't anything about law enforcement being bad. And again, content does not matter. I would not like to see something up there that was in some way racist or objectionable, but I'm willing to put up with that in exchange for allowing for things that I do agree with. And I think that it's important that as a community, as a public agency, we uphold the Constitution. Whether we like the content or not is irrelevant. We can set limitations on time. We take them down every Monday, let's say. If you don't have your number on the back of it, you won't get it back, or you have to go to the district office yourself. But there are limitations we can put on it so they're not up there forever and getting all worn and faded. But we can't control the content. I'm willing to put up with some objectionable content in order to allow for the content of everybody to be considered. Those are my comments on this, and I really would like to hear what the other directors have to say. Thank you.
Other directors, do you have anything to say on this item?
Harry, I'll go ahead and weigh in. I don't disagree with Director Rice at all. There are lots of places in town already available for public comment, and then they're used on a regular basis. And I don't know why they need more areas to do that at. Like the our legal counsel says, I think this is a slippery slope. Once we start down it, we're going to get a lot of feedback and issues with people taking them down when they shouldn't be taking them down without consulting us, et cetera, et cetera. So I think this is a very complex issue, and I think based upon the time constraints, et cetera, that I would vote to table this until July sometime.
President Farmer, may I respond to that right quick?
Certainly.
I think it's only a complex issue if we want to control what the content is that's posted there. I think we can put limitations on how long it can be there. I think there are other things that we can do to reduce the cluttered and messiness of it. We've got a bulletin board across the street that at times can be quite out of date and have lots of old things on them that are, and sometimes even commercial things. This is an issue that I think the only reason it's complex is if we want to try and control what people post. And I think there are limitations we could put that are within what we could do and still respecting the First Amendment. And I don't disagree that this is a complex issue overall, but if I don't object, and I wouldn't object to pushing it to July, except that I don't think that the default should be to pull down anything that gets posted on district property. I just don't think it's right. That shouldn't be the default.
Okay. My point is kind of like, okay, we have a lot of property. Should we restrict it to some of our property, give them a forum for that property? Where should that be? Again, how long should we allow it to be posted? When do we take it down? What happens if somebody else takes it down, et cetera, et cetera? That's why I see it as a complex issue, because we've got a lot of property. Allowing people to put graffiti up, is that going to be allowed? And how do we handle that issue, and et cetera, et cetera? So that's why I would like to see this tabled until we can have more input or more direction. Somebody come up with a resolution that I can look at and say, yeah, I either agree with all that or I want to amend this part or that part. That's all.
Once again, everyone wishes to have a comment on this, and I think that's very appropriate for this very important issue of free speech, especially in our community. So, Vice President Steidel.
Thank you, President Farmer. I agree with Director Pearson and what he said, and I agree with Director Rice in the concept and the appropriateness of our amendment rights. The difficulty comes into the fact that you will never be able to legislate human behavior. And because you cannot legislate human behavior, we can put constraints on what happens, but that doesn't mean those things aren't going to happen anyway, even if we put that into place. And then the additional layer that you lay to it is, okay, now how do then CCSD, which is not an enforcement agency, enforce any of that? And then what's the perception of CCSD in that regard? The other thing I think for consideration, we're a tourist town and we kind of become insular to ourselves because we are a small enough community that there are some very strong relationships that develop all the way across the community. And we tend to think in terms of knowing each other a lot, but we don't know other people that are coming into the community. And we don't know what kind of reaction that will, you know, potentially generate by people entering the community for any extreme of what that represents. Now, granted, there are other public places for things to be posted, and they have been posted. The crosses have been reposted. But I don't know that people are going to feel the same way when they see an objectionable type of flag displayed, or would might take exception to a different inference of a religious icon being represented and posted in a public way. I agree. It's a complex issue. I think it deserves further conversation, and to temper it with using some reason and judgment, which is difficult right now. So I would very much support tabling this also and looking to have further conversation about it.
Director Howell.
I appreciate that everybody wants to talk more about this. However, I want to say a couple of things, but I have a couple of questions first. What is the status of the vets of the bulletin board at the Vets Hall? Are there rules regarding posting on that? Can anyone answer that for me?
Yes, Director Howell, there are no rules for posting on the Vets Hall bulletin board. The facilities manager reviews that on a weekly and monthly basis for events that are passed, et cetera, and clean some of that off and some of those that are faded, et cetera. But there's no policy in place for that.
Thank you. So in fact, someone, should they want, they could post something that others might find objectionable on that bulletin board, and we have no policy regarding its removal. Similarly, and this is, I think, what Director Rice is actually speaking of, the district has no policy regarding posting of anything on any district property, whether it can be or should not be. So for the facilities manager to remove something from district property where we have no policy whatsoever is a little bit premature. That probably should have come to some higher authority before that material was removed. So I just want to point out, we have no policy. Furthermore, it is true that people can put other things on, or have, let's say, not necessarily allowed to, but they have put things on county property. The fact that it's on county property, however, doesn't imply or indicate that that area has been dedicated by the property for free speech uses. In fact, I can tell you that the reason you see things on county property in this town is because the county rules of posting are not being enforced. If you go to Paso Robles and you post any kind of a sign on any kind of public pole, it will come down. They have people, they will take it right down, and they'll take it down soon. So yes, in other words, I guess what I'm saying is, I see that there are other places where people in this town where people are exercising their free speech, but there is no dedicated area. Maybe I'm wrong, but I am not aware of any dedicated area for free speech or for the posting of signs. So that's one thing. Now, not wishing to take up too much time, but I have one last question before, and then I'm going to make a motion. My understanding is that certain types of speech can be regulated, and Mr. Carmel can correct me on this, speech, for example, any kind of activity that advocates the overthrow of the government can be prohibited. Any kind of, and then there is the speech which is equivalent to calling, yelling fire in a crowded theater. Certain kinds of speech that can lead to certain results. It seems to me there are some legal precedent for regulating that. The question I have is specifically relating to two things. Whatever the legal definition of hate speech is, and whether that can be controlled, and the issue of speech that incites to violence. And my impression is that speech that is clearly inciting violence is also something that can be controlled. But these are issues for the for our council. One thing that I think is apparent to me, however, is that it is possible and legitimate to limit postings to non-commercial. In other words, we can limit advertising. Having said that, I think Amanda's proposal of allowing things to go up for a week and then taking them down on Monday is probably pretty good. However, I appreciate that the topic does need further discussion. However, just tabling it indefinitely doesn't do it for me. So I move that this topic be postponed until the next regular board meeting.
Are we considering that a motion?
I just moved it, yes.
I would second that at our next available, where we have time available, like July or August. Would you be okay with like setting it as at July or August?
I would prefer just July. That August is too far out.
Yeah. I would second if you would just say that at one of the July meetings.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that agreeable?
That's agreeable.
Now let's see if we can get another vote.
Were you seconding then, Director Ryan?
Yes. Yes.
If I could just make a couple of comments. Obviously, this issue around free speech and posting one's expression of their opinion in this very vital period of our nation's history, where we're addressing a core issue at the depths of the consciousness of our nation, and that is racism. And I don't think in any way, shape, or form, let's put it this way, we should be considering somehow not allowing that to happen. Of course, other issues can be addressed as well. Director Rice and I were at the gathering and the march 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks ago at the Vets Hall and then in the West Village. And there were a large group of youth there, and many of them had signs. And, you know, this is of deep concern to the young people of our nation, everything that's going on. They're seeing a world that we didn't grow up in. And so somehow I feel like this makes it, this item of free speech in our community, how it is addressed, makes it even more crucial item than would normally be considered. So I just want to put that out there. So we have a motion and a second to table this item and put it on a July agenda. Haley, could we have a roll call vote, please? Excuse me. I see Director Pearson is shaking his head. If you could unmute yourself, please.
Yeah, there's a public comment.
Oh, but that's, you know, I'm sorry. I saw that up there, Tina, and I meant to go to you before I commented. So my apologies. Go right ahead.
Thank you. That's happened too frequently during this meeting today. But let me just say this. As a member of the public, as a member or a resident of this community, which is unincorporated, we are not a city, and I don't think we can deny people their First Amendment rights. But let me just say this, that we also cannot pamper to those folks who come into our town as tourists, because as a person who participated in the protest, the very peaceful protest march, there were at least 90% of the cars driving by, which is unusual around 6 o'clock at night. 90% of them were honking and raising their hands in support of the protest march. And so to say that, you know, that we should be concerned about the people that are coming to our precious little town a lot of those people feel the same way we do, whatever the feelings may be that they may have. But I will say that that was about the number, about 90% was quite amazing, actually. So I think that Mr. Carmel has said he is not a constitutional attorney. Maybe we need, maybe you need to speak to a constitutional attorney. I don't know, but this is problematic. But I think that if you look at the vets hall at the corner of Cambria Road and Main Street, right at the corner of the, there are a number of signs there that are kind of growing, and nobody's taken those away. So why was this such an issue? And I think it shouldn't have been. There are many signs that occur in Cambria that are put up. I don't agree with, but I don't make a big deal of it because that person has the right. I mean, it is what we have, I think, is with our First Amendment, we have to accept certain things. But I do believe that for the general manager, if he made the decision, it should have come before the board and not been made just as willy-nilly. I do not think that should have happened. Those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dickerson. Once again, I believe we have a motion and a second. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Thank you very much, Haley. Roll call vote, please.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. Let's move on to the item. We're not addressing item 8B. We'll move that forward to another time. 8D should go fairly quickly. General Manager Weigel, would you introduce this item, please?
President Farmer, I think you'll need a motion to continue.
Right.
You're right. Thank you. So here I am. So someone just chastised me for not acknowledging a person that had their hand raised for public comment. So obviously, after 3 hours, yours truly may not be on top of his game. So thank you, Mr. Carmel. And since we have a closed session on the horizon, do I hear a motion to extend this meeting till 6 o'clock?
I'll move that motion.
Thank you, Vice President Steidel.
Second.
Thank you, Director Pearson. Haley, could we have a roll call vote, please?
Yes. Vice President Steidel?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Howell? Director Rice?
No.
President Farmer?
Yes. Thank you. So moving back.
I'd just like to note, President Farmer, I appreciate how you have been managing the time during this meeting, and my no vote should not be a reflection on that. I appreciate you managing the time. Going through the budget is always a very long item.
Well, it seemed like it needed to be done with regard to all the other items being secondary. So thank you so much, Director Rice. And I know how you are with regard to the 3 hour limit. So no problem with the no vote. So let's quickly address item 8D. And General Manager Weigold, could we give this a shot again, please?
Yes, President Farmer. Agenda item 8D is discussion and consideration of establishing an ad hoc committee to recommend bylaw amendments regarding board member participation at standing committee meetings. Staff is recommending that the board of directors discuss and consider establishing an ad hoc committee of two directors to draft a bylaw provision relating to board member participation at the meetings of policy, finance, and resources infrastructure standing committees.
Thank you. I could open this to a board discussion. I don't see any public comment, considering the fact that Director Rice, with some minor assistance from yours truly, we've been addressing bylaws. So I think the two of us should be that ad hoc committee. And maybe we could hear a motion and a second to form that committee.
I'm not available to serve on that committee. I forwarded the language that we had been working on when you and I were part of the committee for the regular bylaws to the general manager and to district council, but I can't serve on that committee, I'm sorry to say.
All right. So do I have another willing volunteer to help out in this fashion? I see Director Howell's face in front of me.
Yeah, I can do it. It's if you, yes, that'll be fine.
Okay. And I see Director Pearson, you just raised your hand. I don't know if you're volunteering.
Well, I could have volunteered, but I think Director Howell is a great choice, and I think you guys can very easily get this done in less than a month or so. So
I would think so. So thank you so much. So do I hear a motion and a second for this particular ad hoc committee of Director Howell and myself?
Be so moved.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Thank you. Director Rice, you have your hand up, but I don't believe that.
That was to make the motion.
Oh, thank you so much. Okay. So, Haley, once again, roll call vote, please.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Steidel?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. So, first, very quickly, any future agenda items? I think we've had a number of them that were discussed today. I think we'll take a note of those to be put in the July agendas. So,
President Farmer, can we do the committee reports at next week's meeting? Do you think we'll have time to do that?
I don't see any problem.
Okay.
And I'm sorry we couldn't address them today. Director Howell, you have your hand up?
I'd like to have a discussion because, again, I don't think there is a district policy, or at least I'm not aware of one, the policy regarding the use of surveillance devices. I believe that we do need to address this. So I would like that on a soon future agenda, please.
Surveillance devices?
Yeah, there's some folks out there that feel like they can fly drones up to... is that what you're referring to, Director Howell?
Actually, specifically referring to surveillance cameras. The use of drones over this area is actually already regulated, I think.
By somebody else.
Are you talking about the cameras on the Fiscalini Ranch?
Or any other surveillance cameras that we may have around.
Okay. We don't want this becoming China, right?
That's my point.
Gotcha. All right.
And then I did name two others. I just want to be sure they don't get forgotten. And this have to do with the budget. I got three of them. Removing that, and this isn't too important, but removing the line item regarding sick leave and vacation pay so Pam doesn't have to keep track of it anymore. The issue of reserves, whether we accumulate reserves for the water plant or whether we each year start fresh with another 100 looking. In other words, that was the issue that Director Pearson had originally brought up. And then the other one that I had, I just want to be sure it doesn't get forgotten, has to do with moving the allocated overhead. I'd like to have that discussed, regarding the issue of having the allocated overhead relative to the new water plant, have that. I'd like to discuss not putting that with the regular water fund. So those are the items that I would like discussed.
So I was going to suggest in a summary that several of those are items perhaps that the finance committee could take a look at also as recommendations to the budget structure, since a lot of those relate to prior budgets and budget policies. But if you want to just take it to the board level, then that's...
My thought, I'm sorry, may I answer President Farmer? I don't mean to get a back and forth here. May I answer Director Steidel, please?
Certainly.
These are more board level policies. For example, the issue of how the accumulation for the running of the SWF when it's not run, that is a board level policy. I don't really feel that once the board makes a policy, then the finance committee can figure out what to do about that policy. because what that may mean is something else has to be adjusted. Regarding the sick leave and vacation pay, that's just strictly an accounting issue and not that germane. It's sort of awkward and looks weird. And it saved me having to ask the question next year when I forget. So I think the most important, and the reserves, so the treatment of the reserves for the SWF, and what was the other one? Oh, the allocated overhead. Those are our policy issues. And I don't believe that, I think ultimately they'll end up at the Finance Committee, but I think the board needs to have an overarching policy. The other way it would come to us is from the Finance Committee recommending such a policy. But in my purpose is to get this discussed by the board members. I mean, I'd love to hear what the Finance Committee has to say about it, but it's really the board on this one that I want to hear.
Well, they're still at it. And Harry must have reminded three or four more times. Really? So in my last comments, I said,
Whoa.
Thank you.
Tina?
Can't just jump in like that.
Tina?
I must not have muted her when she spoke last time. Sorry about that.
Right. She wasn't muted. Yeah. Anyway,
Tina wasn't muted. Just making an observation there. Director Howell, that you had more to say, please.
No, I was just explaining why I think Director Seidel's point's well taken. And I don't really want to branch over. Normally, I like the stuff to come through the Finance Committee first, because then it saves me a lot of time and I get a lot of better understanding. But since these are policy issues, they're not directly related to accounting per se. This has to do with, it's just a little more general. And so that's why I would prefer it. Otherwise, we end up Finance Committee making one, because I don't intend to lobby the Finance Committee to get what I want.
Okay.
So, but we'd still end up with a discussion regardless, I think. But I would prefer it first rather than afterwards, that's all.
I support doing it in that fashion also.
Did we vote already on it? No, these are just future. We don't vote on these, okay.
Future agenda items, Don. Yeah, do, believe me, I'm
losing it up.
We'll persevere. So we've addressed agenda items. Let's move on to, I'm going to close this meeting.
President Farmer, before you close the meeting, can I just ask a question real quick?
Well, I hope I have the answer. Don't embarrass me.
Do you plan on discussing regular business item 8B? I did have two public comments on that item.
Really? Yeah. Are they, are these written or folks in the audience?
Two of them are written, but I see that Jim Berenger is still here, and he was one of the written comments. And he just raised his hand.
President okay. Farmer, we can push this to next week's meeting if you want.
I think that would be a wise move. That special meeting that was going to discuss one item looks like it may have a few additions to it. So thank you for that suggestion. And
as long as there's not objection from other people on the board, I mean.
Well, I would rather see that go to July. There's no, we don't need electric to get that right away. Yeah, electric vehicles, they'll still be buzzing in July. Yeah. So.
Let's first meeting in July is fine with that one. And we can get the public comment read to us at that time.
Yeah. And Jim, I hope you're okay with that. Jim will still be in town in July. All right. So we are now, thank you so much, Haley. So now we are ending this meeting, adjourning to closed session. And Haley, do we have any public comment? Oh, I see
Jim
has their hand raised. Oh, Jim. Jim lowered his hand. Thank you, Jim. So do we have any public comment on closed session items?
I do not have any public comment on this item.
All right. It is 5:08. Is everyone okay with returning at 5:20, or do we need a little more time?
5:15 is fine with me.
5:15 works for me, too.
Yeah, 5:15 is fine.
Okay. 5:15 it is. We'll see you folks in 7. I want to thank everybody
that tuned in. We had a number of attendees, public participants, as well as member of the board. I think this is a very productive meeting, and it just indicates what a really, how could I say it, a really involved and dedicated group of people we have on the board, as well as people out in the community. Thank you all so much, and we'll see you in 6 minutes.